Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks, 200-some stations strong, on Saturday, October 20th, 2018. This is episode 1533. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. And by Capterra. Find software solutions for your business needs. Capterra is a free website with over 600 categories of business software, thousands of programs, and reviews. Visit capterra.com/techguy. While you're there, get your free copy of the Big Book of Free Software. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. It's Tech Guy time. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater. You got your digital photography. You got your smartphones. You got your smart watches. That's what we're here for. That's what we're here to talk about. 8888-ASK-LEO is my phone number if you want to call in. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still call me. You just Skype me, right? 8888-ASK-LEO. Skype out. You know about Skype out. That'll give you direct access to Heather Hammon, the phone ranger's in studio today. So say hi to Heather. We don't see her much these days because she's a celebrity on that other station. But now that every once in a while we see her, we say hi. Hello, phone ranger. Hello. You can say hi to her and say, I want to talk to Leo about anything with a chip in it. When we talk, I should warn you, people may be listening, and at least one person is listening, James DeRuvo. He's writing down everything we talk about. That way, we have a record of it, and we can put it on the website, which is very handy for everybody, because once it's on the website, if you forget something or, you want to know more, it's all there. It's all there. That's techguylabs.com, in case you want to make a note of that. techguylabs.com. Well, I have in my hands a Pixel 3 phone, the new Google Pixel 3 XL. In fact, I went out yesterday. I went to San Francisco's Chinatown because I wanted to practice with the camera, take pictures and see what it... I was very impressed. Very impressive camera. Even the zoom kind of blew me away. And that's always been a kind of a drawback to smartphone cameras is, unlike a fancy camera, they really don't zoom very well. They do something called digital zoom, which means basically they're blowing the picture up so it gets all funny. We call it pixelated. And it, doesn't look good. Although I see people doing that all the time. All the time I see people doing the pinch while they're taking a picture. I think, boy, you're going to regret that. you're not going to like that picture. Except on the Pixel 3, it does very well. Other cameras like the iPhone solve this problem by putting more lenses on. But Google just said, no, we don't want more lenses. We just want one lens, and we're going to do it all in software. And they do some really kind of amazing things, taking multiple images and stacking them, and it really has a very good effect. I was mightily impressed. I guess I'll have to put it up on the show notes or on the blog or somewhere. Yeah, maybe I'll do that. I'll put it on the blog, so you can see. I took a picture of the Transamerica Pyramid in San Francisco from some distance because it's tall. That was far, far away. So I took a picture and then I zoomed it. I think I zoomed it quite a bit. I mean, I think it was quite a zoom. And the result was dramatic. I was able to zoom in. Unfortunately, I'm not looking at these pictures. They don't look great. There we go. I was able to zoom in maybe, I know you can't see them, so it doesn't really matter how they look. I'll tell you. I was able to zoom in, I don't know, that's maybe quite a bit, 5 or 6 times, maybe 8 times Zoom. And whatever it's doing to stack the images and get the resolution is remarkable. Really, really kind of phenomenal. They maybe have solved this one thing holding camera phone photography back, this ability to zoom in. Low light photography was remarkable as well. I was very impressed, frankly, by the camera. Phone people are complaining about the phone because it has a big notch. The biggest, I guess all phones now are going to start having notches because they want the screen to go all the way to the edge, right? So that there's no bezel. Google committed 2 sins, according to the phone Cognoscenti. One, they didn't go all the way to the edge on the bottom. They have what's called a chin. They did that because they have a speaker down there. Two, they did a notch. Now, the iPhone does a notch, too. Everybody does a notch nowadays. A notch is not so unusual. But the notch on the iPhone, while wide, is shallow. It's not so deep. The Google notch is deeper and narrower. But for some reason, this just is offensive to some people. And I'm not sure why. You still have to make room for 2 cameras. There's 2 selfie cameras, a narrow and a wide. Because nowadays, you know, the kids, it's all about the selfie. And the wide angle lets them get more people into their selfie. Instead of having super long arms. Remember in the Academy Awards some years ago, Ellen was doing a selfie of movie stars. And she couldn't get her arm out far enough to get all the movie stars in. So somebody, I don't know, Bradley Cooper, somebody took the camera and he had longer arms. But if they'd had this wide angle thing, Samsung does this too, you could get them all in. So it's got 2 cameras. It's got room for a speaker there too. I don't find it in the least bit offensive. But Ron Amadio, who I love at Ars Technica, called it a greasy phone. I don't know what he means by that. He just didn't like it. I think it's phenomenal. I'm happy. The screen is much better than the previous Pixel. So if you're looking for an Android phone and you don't mind spending $750, or maybe it's $800 for the base model. If you don't mind spending that money, I think I spent almost $1,000 on this. Jeez. But I'm just, you know, this is now you're just used to it. Just what a phone costs. I think it's a very good choice for an Android device. I also got the $80 charging stand, which is a little expensive, but I guess it does some magical things. I don't know what it does. It does some magical things, so it's worth extra money. It turns the Google Pixel 3 into some sort of magical clock that you would put on your nightstand, which is probably a terrible idea to have a phone next to where you sleep. I know it is for me because I pick it up in the middle of the night, and that's a big mistake. Apple announced, now that's it. Google got its day in the sun. Boom, it's over because Apple then announced on Friday that it was going to have another event. We've been waiting. We've been wondering. We've been hoping. I need one more participle to make that a quartet. Waiting, wondering, hoping, praying. And yes, our prayers came true October 30th, day before Halloween, which is a Tuesday. Apple's going to have an event in New York City. They kind of threw us a curve there. And while we don't know what the event is, because, you know, they don't tell us, we pretty much know what the event's going to be. The the invitations, and there were several dozens of them, they all said the same thing. There's more in the making. And then they had different interesting designs for the Apple logo. And I saw many, many, many of them. Everybody in the press, except me, because I don't get invited to these things, but everybody in the press got a different Apple, it looks like. And the event, which is going to be 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern Apple time in New York City, will be streamed, I believe. And we pretty much know it will be at least new iPads. And the reason we know that is we've seen in Apple's own operating system in 12.1, the next version of iOS, which is already in testing. People who have the test version have seen images of an iPad Pro. Here you go. This is exciting, with no bezels or very narrow bezels, which indicates that the home button will be gone, that it'll use Face ID. It'll be kind of like a blown-up iPhone, which the iPad Pro always has been. Maybe new Macs, too. That's really the hoping, praying, wishing part of this, is people are hoping there'll be new MacBooks. Ooh, wouldn't it be nice if they updated the MacBook Air or the Mac Mini? Maybe. Don't know. Maybe the new AirPods, which have been strongly hinted at, will be out. Who knows? Maybe the wireless charging stand, which they announced more than a year ago. Who knows? October 30th. And I'll be talking about it a week from Saturday, next week. 2 weeks from today. Is that right? Yes. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your phone calls coming up. And we're going to say hello to the Phone Ranger. She's all in pink today. Hi. Right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Da, 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 da. Oh, I am. It's a sight for sore eyes, all in pink. Heather Hammon, who for a long time was the Phone Ranger on this show until she was stolen away by another show. You may remember her from Dr. Dean. And now you're doing the evenings on KGO in San Francisco, right?
Yeah, afternoon drive.
Oh, it's afternoon drive, not evening.
Right.
It's the prime time.
Oh, that was a while ago. Yeah. Traffic, I'll take care of you. I'll hook you up with the right routes.
Do you do traffic and weather together?
I don't, and I should, because when you add in a little Heather, traffic and weather sounds
together
much
with
better.
Heather, it's magical.
And you know, weather, traffic's difficult. Weather in the Bay Area? Really easy.
There's nothing to say.
You know, layers.
It's either raining or not. Yeah.
We're layers. It could get layers. Foggy later.
Could be foggy in the morning. Marine layer. Hey, well, anyway, welcome. It's nice to see you. Kim's taking the weekend off. It's nice for her.
Great to see you.
And we haven't worked together in, it seems like, ages. But
I
I'm
know.
Just
and people here have gotten married and had babies and stuff like that.
I know.
That.
Like, I know. Transitions.
So much
I think
has
a couple
happened.
Of people are dead.
Oh, really? I'm
no.
sorry.
But... But one of these days, Leo's going to kick it. We know that.
No! He,
as the oldest guy around. Hey, who should I start with here?
Well.
I
think you can help Sam in Yadkinville, North Carolina.
Wow. I'd like
help
to.
Him help
I'd
his
like
mother.
To help him. All right.
He wants to keep her around, you know?
Yeah, I don't blame him. Thank you, Heather. So nice to see you again. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sam in Yadkinville, North Carolina. Hello, Sam.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome. How you doing?
All right.
You survived the storm and all that?
Both of them, yes, sir.
Man, what a mess.
A lot of damage, but we survived them.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. So what can I do for you?
I've got two quick questions, but one main reason I'm calling is my mother's not doing great. I've got it fixed. She can't get around very much, but I've got a light switch with the Hue lights.
Oh, nice.
Or no. And I've got a light outside. It's about 30 feet up in the air that my dad can see when he's outside.
Perfect.
So he doesn't have to be with her. Well, she's fell a couple of times, and I was wanting to find out. I know the new Apple Watch has the
fall detection. Yeah.
Well, I was wanting to find out if they have something like that that I can get either a bracelet or a necklace or something that would fall, that would turn the Hue light on and start blinking it.
Boy, that sounds like a really great idea. And Philips, which makes the Hue, does have something called the Philips Lifeline. Let me see if it, I mean, given it's the same company, you'd think they'd work together. It's called Auto Alert, and it has in it accelerometers and barometric sensors and a finely tuned algorithm. That's what they say, a finely tuned algorithm to detect 95% of many types of falls and trigger fewer false alarms. That's part of the problem. So... the idea is it calls a response center, but let me see if it ties to the Hue lights, because that would be so awesome. And I don't know why it wouldn't. It's the same company, but you know, Philips is a kind of a big company, and I don't see any. They have a medic alert system though. That's the first place I'd start. Home safe, auto alert. Yeah, this seems like. This is a whole question, really, of home automation, and it has been a very dissatisfying sector for the last two decades. There's a motion sensor which I use, but that's not gonna help you. That turns the lights on when I go in the room, which I love. I don't, I would say, I would look into this Philips Lifeline technology. It seems as if it ought to, since it does detect falls, and it would be a great start to that. The question is this automation piece, and this is why it's been such a disappointment, is you got things that do things, lots of them, but they don't seem to talk to each other very well. And Apple and Google have both, you know, pushed this idea of a hub. You know, the new Google device is called the Google Home Hub. Apple's right. Got the iPod, you know, the pod, the Home Pod. The whole idea is these have, you know, radios in them to communicate with these devices. The nice thing about, you know, Google stuff is you can do, you know, and Apple stuff, you can do scenarios. You can say, good night, you know, Apple. And then doors will lock, lights will turn down or off and all this stuff. But I don't know if they yet tie to the fall sensors. Their best bet is to look at the Philips, since it's the same company, right? Anybody in the chat room have any experience? So what you want is this light, this warning light for your dad that mom's fallen.
Right. Basically, I got it where the light turns red and he knows to go in. And we've got neighbors and stuff, so if she falls, the light would start flashing and we'd know somebody needs to get over there.
But she has to push a button or say something.
Right. And she's got a Google Home, but if she falls and is knocked unconscious...
Yeah, she can't say anything. Yeah. And that's the idea of this Philips thing. I don't know off the top of my head. I'm looking at it. It seems like that would be a clear use for this that Philips ought to support, since it's all the same company and they make this very. And by the way, the motion sensor stuff for falling is considered quite good. You know, so that's nice. But if it doesn't, you know, the Philips Lifeline, I would go to a lifeline.philips.com. Look at their medical alert systems, and I'm looking at it, but I don't see immediately where it would tie to the Hue, and that puzzles me. Seems like it ought to, and if it's going to, that's going to be the most direct route. You could, if you got her an Apple Watch and turned on fall detection, and I don't have a lot of experience with fall detection, with how accurate it is, and of course false positives, although you probably don't care about false positives. Dad can come running in, and it can be everything's fine, and he can go back out. So I think maybe looking at an Apple Watch, cause that you can definitely do a script with, I would bet, and that would then change the lights. And if this, then that script, again, I'm going to have to do some investigation. It's a really interesting, question. Scooter X is going to put a link in the show notes to a Hackaday project.
Yeah,
fall detector wearable for elderlies in clinics. This goes to an Arduino. Now, this, if you're really handy, you could program this for sure to turn on the Hue lights. So, in fact, I even see the Hackaday has kind of that use case. So there's one way to do it if you don't mind building your own kit. Anybody wants to help, give me a ring. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I think the Apple Watch, you could probably get it to talk to a script. I bet you, by golly. Our Tech Eye podcast this week brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Oh, man, if you are in the mood to buy a house, maybe it's time to move or find a new place. Maybe you've got a growing family. You know what a stressful thing that is. It's the biggest check you'll ever write. It's a big purchase. Your family's going to live in it. There's no need to add the stress of rising interest rates to this problem. So I've got a solution, Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage to make it easy to get a home loan. It's an entirely online home loan approval process. You can literally do it on your phone. And the three-step process is fast. They call it the power buying process. Step one just takes a few minutes. You go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy right now. Answer a few simple questions. You choose the loan you want. They'll tell you which loans you qualify for, what the rates are, the term, the down payment. And within a few minutes, they'll say, good, pre-qualified. Nice. Eh, that was fast. Then, within the next day or so, usually about 24 hours, they're going to verify your income, assets, and credit and give you the next step, verified approval. Now, that's basically like you got the loan. That's you'll get a letter that's saying they're verified. It basically means you're a cash buyer. When you go to a seller with the letter or to show them on the screen verified, the seller puts you right at the front of the line. They say, oh, well, you know, you got the money. Because everybody else is saying, well, I'm going to buy a house contingent on getting a loan. There's no contingency with you. You got the money. But then the next part kicks in, and this is awesome. Once you're verified, you qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. They're going to lock your rate. And they lock it for up to 90 days, up to 3 months while you shop. That means even when interest rates go up and they're ticking up, even if they go up, yours will not. It means you basically, you're guaranteed the rate won't go up for 90 days. If the rates go down, your rate will go down. Yeah, sure. But they will not raise your rates. And that's awesome. It's exactly what you'd expect from America's best, largest mortgage lender. Number one in customer satisfaction, 8 years running. It's Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage. All you got to do to get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Now, Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. It's everything I said based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Now, they are an equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. You don't have to remember all that. Just remember this, rocketmortgage.com/techguy. And we thank Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans for their support. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Here he is, Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. Woo-hoo. Joins us every week to talk about big screen TVs, surround sound, and all that jazz. Hello, Scotty.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I am well. How are you?
Good, thank you.
So let's talk about IMAX, shall we?
You know, let's.
Let's. What's the latest?
Last week we were talking about First Man, this new movie that neither you nor I liked very much.
Did you see it?
I did.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
I went to an IMAX theater, and specifically I went to the IMAX theater because in this movie, in the last scenes, more or less the end scenes of the movie when he's actually on the moon, in IMAX only, the picture becomes taller. Because they shot those sequences on IMAX cameras.
Yeah.
And this is a trend in movies. There are quite a few movies, a surprising number actually, that have at least some of the footage shot on IMAX cameras. And IMAX cameras have a taller picture. So this involves what's called the aspect ratio, which is the ratio of the width of the image to the height of the image. Now, most movies that you go into a normal cinema to see have a particular aspect ratio that's quite wide. That's why it's called widescreen. But in IMAX, the screen is more square-ish, and so the image is taller. Now, when they show a regular movie in an IMAX theater, there's black bars on the top and bottom of that screen. But when you use an IMAX camera to capture some or all of the movie, the image actually expands up and down to fill the entire screen. And that's a reason to go to IMAX. There are a bunch of movies that have been shot this way, at least in part. Dunkirk, the Christopher Nolan Batman movies, some of the new Star Trek movies, some of the Transformer movies, Star Wars, Captain America, Civil War, a bunch of them.
Does First it take Man, you out of the movie, though, doesn't it, to when that happens?
No, it doesn't. Surprisingly, it's a very good point. Surprisingly, it doesn't. You hardly even notice.
Oh, okay.
Generally speaking, you know, you're just going, wow, like when he's on the moon and it has expanded.
Right.
It's much more impactful and immersive. And up till now, the only place that would happen is in an IMAX theater. But now IMAX and DTS, the company that's big into theater sound, have developed a program called IMAX Enhanced, which brings that experience into the home. So they
does that mean I'm going to watch the movie on a smaller screen the whole time and then suddenly it's going to get big?
Well, now this is a very interesting question. Because what it does is when in those scenes, when the picture gets taller, most people have a screen that is 16 by 9,
right?
16
right.
units wide by screen. 9
Yeah.
Right. That's called widescreen. But movies are typically even wider than that. And so when you watch a movie on a 16:9 screen, you have black letterbox bars above and below because the aspect ratio is wider than it is that tall. So these new IMAX enhanced movies, and Sony Pictures and Paramount Pictures are signed on to do this. For movies that have this changing aspect ratio, they will expand to fill the 16:9 screen during those scenes. And so they've got content on board, and they've got hardware companies on board. Sony at the latest Cedia show, which was about a month ago, a little more than a month ago in San Diego, Sony showed their flat panel TVs and their projectors all having this capability built in. Then we went over to the Sound United booth, which is the parent company of Marantz and Denon, and their AVRs, audio video receivers, also some of their new ones will have this capability, and some older models will be able to be updated with a firmware update to support this. And so it's a way of bringing IMAX into the home, where these expanded scenes, in some cases entire movies, fill up your entire screen with information. Now, one interesting part about that is that the IMAX aspect ratio is even taller than 16:9. So
Right. You're
still not getting everything that you would see in an IMAX theater, but you're getting more than you would see in a typical movie presentation. So it's possible. Now, one question is, well, are they going to have a different Blu-ray or title?
Yeah, how is this going to work?
How is this going to work? We don't know yet. That's one of the problems. You know very well, I'm sure, that retailers hate having multiple versions of a movie, say, or something for sale. Oh, well, if you have an IMAX enhanced system, you can buy this one and it'll give you that advantage. There are other advantages to the system, too. They've done IMAX sound, immersive sound is 12 channels, including four overhead. And so they're formatted in such a way with special bass management that sends the information to the subwoofer that needs go there.
Do I need a special receiver? Now, is this in addition to Atmos? This is something else.
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Yeah, boy.
however, your standard Atmos speaker configuration will work just fine. They recommend having a 7-channel around, at least one subwoofer, and 4 channels overhead to make this work ideally. So if you have an Atmos setup, it'll work just fine. You don't have to change anything there. One problem I see is that many aficionados, enthusiasts, movie enthusiasts, have a 2.35 screen, which is the aspect ratio of most movies. And so when an IMAX enhanced movie goes to 16:9, the image on your 2.35 screen will actually be smaller. Somebody asked about that at one of the press conferences at Cedia, and the guy said, well, yeah, but the majority of people have 16:9 screens. Well, yeah, that's true. But if you're looking for the most immersive experience you can get, the most cinematic experience you can get, you're going to go with a wider screen, and this IMAX won't work with that. But if you have a 16:9 screen, as you and I both do on OLED TVs and so on, then when these special scenes come up in a movie, they will expand upward and downward to fill the entire screen and presumably become more immersive.
Interesting.
So it's an interesting idea.
It sounds like a gimmick, to be honest, but okay.
Well, yeah, okay. Basically, it's kind of like THX certification. The IMAX and DTS are going to certify products to meet certain performance specs as well as be able to do this aspect ratio expansion. So it's, you know, we'll see how well it works. It was intriguing. It was intriguing to me.
Yeah. Well, they're always trying to get, you know, it's funny because there's this combat between the theaters that want to get you out of your house and into the theater.
Yes.
And the home theater people who want to get you into your fancy home theater.
That's right. That's right. Always a conflict.
There's never going to be anything as good as going to an IMAX theater. The problem is most people don't have one near them. They don't have a choice.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sadly so.
Sadly.
Those who do, you know, it doesn't have as good black levels as a Dolby Cinema, but this expanded dynamic range or aspect ratio, height quadrant is really very compelling.
All right. Scott Wilkinson, he's our home theater geek, joins us each week at this time to talk about home theater. And you can email Scott at TechEyeLabs.com if you have a question for him. Leo Laporte, the Tech Eye. More calls coming up. And I am going to give you the con, Mr. Scotty.
Why, thank you so very much. I am very happy to be here. Hello, everybody. OG codec, IMAX needs to make a TV. Right. I don't think so.
Special big square TV.
Yeah, big square TV. I mean, there are a lot of IMAXs now with screens that have an aspect ratio of 1.9 to 1, which is still taller than most movies. But it's not the true IMAX aspect ratio, which is 1.43 to 1.
Yeah.
That's almost square. That's almost back to standard definition. You know the old TVs that we had
so
for
funny.
50 years?
4.3.
They were 1.33
so
to 1. Yeah.
How funny.
And we're almost back to that with IMAX. But the IMAX at Universal City here in L.A. is 8 stories tall, that screen. So it's monstrous. And, you know, I mean, I guess in one sense, we'll get these micro LED TV walls in a few years. And that could easily be configured since they're tiles. It could be easily configured into a 1.43 to 1 or 1.9 to 1 or whatever you want. And I think that will then become something pretty special and important for IMAX content in the home. Of course, IMAX their own content will be available in this format as well. I forgot to mention that. You know, the IMAX documentaries and special shows about space and nature and stuff like that, those are all shot at 1.43 to 1 on IMAX cameras. And they would look pretty spectacular in this new format. Ochi Kodak has 4 IMAX theaters within 30 minutes of his house. Very good. Here's another thing to keep in mind if you're searching for IMAX theaters. As I said, some of them have screens that are 1.9 to 1. Some have the really tall screens at 1.43 to 1. It's not always easy to find out which are which theaters have that. Here in LA, the IMAX at the Chinese Theater in Hollywood has a 1.9 screen. But the one at Universal City has a 1.43 screen. So I made a mistake. I should have gone to Universal City to see First Man because of that difference. The difference between the normal movie aspect ratio of 2.35 to 1.9 isn't that great. It's not that big a difference. And so I was kind of like, oh, yeah, okay, I see the difference, but it's not really impressive. If I had gone to the Universal City IMAX, I would have seen that full expansion, which I kind of wish I had, but the movie is not good and I didn't want to sit through it again. If it had been a good movie, I'd have gone. I'd have seen it again at the IMAX at Universal City, but it just wasn't that good. Lawn Dog, what is the reason for this change in aspect ratio by Dolby? No, it's by IMAX, actually. What's the need? Well, the need is immersion. So the whole theory behind IMAX is if you have a very tall image, then you can become more immersed in the image than if it's this wide screen with black bars on top and bottom. That's the whole point, is to fill your field of view not only horizontally but vertically as well. And so that is the reason for that.
All right, Scott, you want to stick around for the top of the hour?
Oh, yeah, happy to.
All right. Thank you. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. Line 2, Brian in Mission Viejo, California. Hello, Brian.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah,
What can I do for you?
So I got a, believe it or not, I got a free airport. It's either the Extreme, the tower size one without the hard drive in it. Is that the Extreme, I guess?
Yep, Airport Extreme, yep.
So, funny story how I got it. I kept returning iPhones because they kept breaking on me, and the guy said, "We feel bad. We'll give you $300 to shop our store and pick out whatever you want." So I got one of those. Yeah.
Here, buy our discontinued product.
Well, this was like 3 years ago.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, because they don't make them anymore. Oh. They don't sell them anymore. They'll keep them up to date for a while. Apple's not going to abandon them, I don't think. I don't know what the time frame is, though. Okay.
Well, my issue is I've got wireless devices all over the house, and everything works fine except for most of the time our iPhones, my wife's iPhone and my iPhone, when we're just searching the Internet, it's like the Internet just stops. And if I get off Wi-Fi, then the page loads like immediately. It's like the Internet just stops.
When you get off Wi-Fi, you go on to the cellular network. Is that what you're getting? Okay. Yeah, so that sounds like the Wi-Fi is broken. So there's a couple of things that could happen here. I always say check. So the first thing that can go wrong is the DNS service. That's the service that says when you enter a name, you know, yahoo.com, it looks up the address because it actually needs a what we call a dotted quad, you know, the 168.37.4.2. That's the actual phone number of yahoo.com, and it needs that to get there. DNS is generally provided in a kind of a cascade. First, your computer says, well, let me see if I already know that, if I visited that site since the last time I've rebooted. Then it says, I don't. Let me ask the router. And the router says, well, I don't. So then it goes to the Internet service provider. And then on up the chain all the way to the 13 official phone books managed by ICANN. So it's possible. It's not unusual for if you have an unresponsive DNS router that can really slow things down. You don't get the message you're not online though, right? It just takes forever.
It doesn't do anything. I see the static bar, but the static bar just like stops.
Yeah, so the computer, if you did this on a computer and turned off Wi-Fi, the browser would immediately say, I don't have internet access. So your computer thinks it has internet access. There's something that's keeping it from getting to that page. So the very first thing you look at is, well, how's my DNS working? And you kind of want to reboot the computer and reboot the router just to reload that. It could even, though, be your internet service provider's DNS server. Sometimes Who's you have a big internet service provider or a small one? Who's your provider?
No, it's Cox.
It could be, you know, usually the big guys like Cox and Comcast and Verizon and AT&T have very fast responsive DNS lookups, and they're not the problem, but occasionally it is. There are ways to diagnose this. My friend Steve Gibson has a DNS benchmark tool you can download for free from grc.com. You can just Google DNS benchmark and find it. And that'll give you some idea of how responsive your internet service provider's DNS server is. You can use others. There's no requirement that you have to go to your internet service provider. So if that seems to be occasionally unresponsive, then you can use lots. There's OpenDNS. Google has one. Cloudflare has 1.1.1.1. I'm not saying that's what's wrong, but that's certainly something to check. More likely, it's a router issue. Have you tried? When you have this happen, do you reboot your router ever?
Yeah, I mean, this happens almost daily.
Yeah, that's sometimes routers. This happens when they're getting flaky, and people get mad at me. The chat room. I know he's going to get mad at me. Scooter X and Mike B in the chat room are going to yell at me. They say routers never wear out. Routers wear out. This one's 3 years old, right? That's a little young to be wearing out. And then, by the way, airports are very good. Apple, they used to be the most expensive routers out there. They're not anymore because all routers are expensive. But they used to be high priced, and the reason was they put good chips in them and they put good quality stuff in them. But one of the things that happens with routers, in my opinion, is because a lot of traffic, if you use them heavily, if you have a lot of computers and a lot of bandwidth and you're using them heavily, they get hot. And that, I think, in my opinion, can shorten their life. So sometimes it's the router's fault. And rebooting the router, unplugging it, waiting, you know, 10 seconds, and plugging it back in again, if that fixes it, then it isn't probably the internet service provider or a DNS server issue. It's probably that router is flaking out. It's a computer, right? And so the first thing that happens when a computer gets unreliable is it freezes. And that's kind of what's happening to you, right? A router freeze.
What about the fact that I've got like 8 powered over Ethernet security cameras going to a switcher, and that switcher goes to the router?
Yeah, that's the bandwidth I was talking about right there. So each of those cameras, depending on the quality of the image, might be using a megabit per second. If you've got 8 megabits constantly flowing through that router, that could be it. Yes. There's a lot of things that could cause it. Yeah. One thing you should know about, I don't think this is commonly known, is, you know, when you get your, when Cox tells you what your bandwidth is, they'll tell you two numbers, a big one and a little one. The big one is your download speed. The little one is your upload speed. If you saturate your upload, what does Cox tell you? And by the way, this is their best case scenario. This is the maximum, not the minimum. What does Cox tell you?
We have a huge plan because I film and my wife photographs, so we're always uploading and downloading. But I think our upload's like 40 or so.
Oh, good. That's a lot. But again, if you've got 8 security cameras each feeding a high def stream at a megabit or a megabit and a half each, now you're using 10 of the 40 all the time. That's the other thing. If you saturate the upstream, your downloads will stop because even though you have more bandwidth, more headroom on the download, every packet you download, typically on a web page, gets acknowledged on the upstream. So download a bunch of data. Okay, got it. Next one, download a bunch of data. Got it. If the got it's are being blocked by a saturated upstream, your downloads will stop. So you might try, since they're all on one switch, you might try just unplugging that switch and seeing if that fixes it. You shouldn't have to reboot the router for that one. The other place to look, and you know, the reason I'm giving you all of these things is because there's so many things that could cause this, is the cable modem from Cox itself also is a computer, and it can, you know, get worn out. Often when you get these, you're leasing them from the cable company, which means they're, you know, used and old. That might be another
one.
This
one's brand new.
Oh, good. Well, that seems less likely. But reboot, it's you, when you own it, not the Cox folks.
Yeah, forget that.
Yeah, no, that's always the best way to go. And it saves you money usually because the rent's so steep on these. But again, it could be the problem. So what you have to do is kind of narrow it down, slowly unplug and plug and reboot until you figure out what the heck's gone on.
Can I ask one other relatable question?
Yes.
A lot of people online say that you can switch a setting to a local link mode. But no one really explains it, so I get what the heck they're talking about. Do you know what that is?
No, no idea. Local link mode. Normally, I mean, in my mind, a local link mode is when you're going to an internal link, like 127.0.0.1 home. I'm not sure what they're talking about. As this would be as a remedy for this?
Yeah.
Local link mode. No, I'd have to Google that. Anybody in the chat room know what you've been reading Reddit again, haven't you? That sounds like something Redditors would come up with. Oh yeah, you're going to local link mode. I love Reddit, and it's usually very handy, but sometimes you get cryptic answers like that from the local geek. Yeah, you need to be local link mode.
It was like the DHCP setting somewhere in there.
Yeah, be careful messing around with that stuff too much. You shouldn't have to do any of that. It should all just work. I'll check out local link and I'll get back to you on that one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I lost a contact in the middle of that. All right, Scotty.
Hello.
Hello. Let's switch to Wilkinson mode while I get myself a cup of coffee here.
Is that anything like local link mode?
Local link mode. I have to look that up. I'm not sure what that is. Yeah. I don't know what that means. That sounds like something more enterprise-y. Here, it's all yours. That's all your seconds, every one of them.
Oh, every one of them. Thank you so much. Yes, glad to be here, as always. Emily the Strange wrote an interesting thing in the chat room, wondering whether or not OLED TVs or LED LCD TVs are more green, which I take to mean power efficient,
Which one consumes less power? Turns out to be a tricky question because it depends on screen size. It depends on the brightness of the image. In fact, there's a story about the Dolby Pulsar professional monitor that's used to grade movies and content. And it consumes – it's an LCD with LEDs behind the screen in a FALD, full-array local dimming configuration. Each individual LED is its own zone. So it's a very precise local dimming system. It consumes so much power and generates so much heat that it's liquid cooled. So, you know, there's an LED LCD TV that consumes a ton of power. So there's that. But I went to Artings.com, R-T-I-N-G.com, which is a great TV review website. And they've also got lots of ancillary information, including a whole page on this very question. And they've got some charts and stuff that that show basically that OLED consumes more power, all else being equal, than LCD TVs. And virtually all LCD TVs these days use LEDs as their light source. So sometimes they're called LED TVs. I think that's a misnomer. I prefer to call them LED LCD TVs because the basic image creation technology is the same. It's an LCD panel. The only thing that's changed is the light source from fluorescent tubes to LEDs, which in fact I'm sure increased the power efficiency of LCD TVs. And so that, and now looks like they are, generally speaking, they consume less power than a comparably sized OLED TV, both in terms of size and in terms of brightness. I put that link in the chat room. So it would be good to check that out if you're interested. But I thought that was a very good question. Let's see here. I knew I had a couple other questions in here. Oh, somebody was asking about prices for OLED TVs. Where was it? Wish I could find it. But he found CRL, I think it might have been. Or no, Maverick 56. Maybe that was it. Found a 55-inch LG C8, which is the lowest end of the LG models that I truly recommend. They have a B8, which is lower still, but it uses a less powerful processor. But the C8, he found a 55-inch for $19.99, which is, holy smokes, that's a good price. Because I really prefer OLED, even though I've now learned through my research that it's a bit less environmentally friendly, consumes a little more power than LCD, but I still prefer the OLED picture because of the blacks. I'm a sucker for deep blacks. And as long as the image or the screen has deep blacks, I know that the whatever else is on the screen, colors, light, whatever, is going to be much punchier. And the black letterbox bars, remember I was talking about that on my segment on Leo's show. You have these black letterbox bars when you're watching a movie, and I much prefer to see those deep, super black rather than kind of gray, as they are on most LCD TVs. So, you know, if you can afford an OLED, and they are coming down in price, LG in particular just drops those prices like crazy, then that's really the better way to go, in my opinion. Let's see. Lawn Dog says, I've seen a wide range in power consumption with TVs that are the same size. Because I am very power conscious, this is an important topic for him. Yes. How much electricity is a TV going to consume when I watch it? Good point. And exactly the point we were trying to talk about here. LCD TVs are going to be better in that regard. So if that's an important consideration for you, then you want to look at LCD TVs rather than OLEDs. It is not Black Friday already, Key 43. But that's coming up pretty darn quick, isn't it? We're already almost close to the end of October. So we're going to be I need to start looking at that because I'm going to want to talk about it when the time comes. Emily the Strange says, I just hear the word organic and I think and I think it's always environmentally friendly. Good point. Very good point. But the organic in organic light emitting diode or OLED simply refers to the fact that the compounds that they use in that material derive from organic chemistry as opposed to inorganic chemistry. So organic chemistry, as I recall, it's been a while since I've studied that, but as I recall, organic chemistry involves carbon. Inorganic chemistry doesn't. That's probably way too simplistic, but in any event, there's a difference between those two types of chemistry. And OLED uses organic chemistry. LCD uses inorganic chemistry. So that's all there is to that, I'm afraid. Yeah, it was Maverick 56 with the TV, with the 55C8 for $19.99. He's still waiting for the price to drop to $1,200. And that'll probably happen. I wouldn't be at all surprised. You might even be able to get a B8 for $1,200, a 55-inch. But again, it has a less capable processor. Not that it's bad. It's not. It's not bad at all. But it's just less capable than the C8 and the ones above it. So that's why I would tend to go for that. Rorks asks, doesn't that imply that the OLED's duty cycle will be quite a bit shorter than LCD LED? It might imply that, but I have to think about that. And by duty cycle, I assume you mean lifespan. And I don't think that probably is a concern. I have never heard of that being a concern. If LCD is inorganic, why do we get dead pixels? Well, because things break. That's all there is to it. Marsworm, are we ever going to see rounded screen TVs? I'm not sure I know what you mean by rounded screen TVs.
Viewports. I don't know why we'd want such a thing.
I know. Somebody said something earlier about watching. We're going to watch on VR sets anyway. I don't.
Hey, thank you, Scott. Have a great one.
Leo.
Take care. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, local link internet. Mike B. has given us the definition. A local link local address is an internet protocol address that is intended only for communications within the segment of a local network, a link, or a point-to-point connection that a host is connected to. These activities will show you how to view and test IPv4 link local addresses in Windows. Don't worry about it, in other words. It's actually what I said it was, which is a local address. And it's not much use to you because nothing on the internet is a local address. So I guess we were talking about why this is such a common problem. I don't mind spending a little time on it. Why our last caller's router or internet just kind of goes. But it fails in an interesting way. It doesn't fail. If your internet goes out completely, almost instantly, your browser will say, I'm not online. If you unplug your router, for instance, and then try to go, it'll say, I'm not online. But if the Wi-Fi continues and the browser says, well, I'm seeing an internet connection, but it's not getting the data, then you'll get this long delay, maybe a white screen and nothing. The browser's designed to give up after a minute or so. So at some point it might just give up. It may never, though, say you've lost internet because it might think you still have it. And so now that's a tricky one. That's where you have to figure out, well, what's going on? What's gone wrong here? And almost always it's a bad router, to be honest. Almost always. I guess the local link is to test the router by linking to another computer on your network through the router. Then you could see, well, is the router still alive? That would be an interesting diagnostic. I honestly think that these are such cheap devices. I know a $300 router sounds like an expensive device, but it isn't. They use They use low-level, low-end chips. They're such cheap devices that I do think they fail. They wear out. Maybe wear out is not the right word, but they do wear out after a while. They fail. And also, it's not a bad idea to upgrade your routers on a regular basis just because technology's changed so rapidly. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number if you want to talk high tech. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, will pick up your call and put you on the air like Craig in Houston, Texas. Hello, Craig.
Well, hey, Leo, I've got a crazy one for you here, okay?
Fire when ready, so, Gridley.
Well, I installed Dropbox on my wife's iPhone and iPad to get the pictures from it onto our new Windows 10 computer.
Okay.
And was using the Photos backup, which I've always been happy with, and I turned off the backup over cellular option. It was disabled.
Yeah.
So
that's normal because it costs you money to start sending all the, you know, basically what you're asking the iPhone to do is back up all the photos to Dropbox. And you want to do that unless you're on Wi-Fi.
Right, right. And that was my plan, and I noticed the pictures were populating on the computer. Well, long story short, I'm in my 70s. I ended up, in the hospital for a couple of days.
Oh, sorry.
Major. I'm better. I'm fine.
Good,
but
good.
When I got home, I had to catch up on some stuff, and I picked up my most recent two bills from my cell phone. And the first month was $500 over.
Oh.
And the second month was $12.75 over.
Well, the first thing you got to do is get a better cell phone provider or a better data plan, anyway, because you shouldn't, that's the old days where you get dinged for going over. That's the old days. Nowadays, every provider offers the normal data plan, which is you get 5 gig. They often say unlimited, but it's usually 5 gigabytes or thereabouts. After that, we slow you down. They shouldn't charge you. That's a big bill to get. So you're wondering what happened.
Everything.
Yeah.
Well, I know what happened. So this is the weird part, and I'm not as concerned about the Dropbox. I wanted to see if you could help me figure out what to do, if anything, with my provider. I went into the cellular data. I don't know. I've heard Renee Ritchie call it the shaming section, where it says what apps are using the data.
Yeah.
Somehow Dropbox ended up still using cellular.
Ugh.
Turned on that section. And, I didn't even think to turn it off in both the app and that section.
Right. Right.
But now what I'm doing is I've called the number, their 800 number, and they're like, yeah, we're sorry, you use the data, you got to pay for it. And I'm like, guys, I pay y'all my monthly fee. I'm not complaining that I pay too much. Like, it is what it is. But this is crazy. And I wrote the CEO an email, and I get these calls every couple of days from the president's office, and they leave like the generic main 800 number, and they don't leave the name. They
just help.
Call me back. I don't know what to do. Like,
yeah.
If the CEO won't help me, am I just stuck?
Well, who's the cell provider?
It's AT&T.
Oh gosh. I mean, technically you're stuck. I mean, you're contractually stuck. You even acknowledge that you use the data. So, but that doesn't mean that they don't, out of public relations, want to give you a break on it. And usually, my experience has been they will.
I know.
Tweet it. Do you have a Twitter account?
I can come up with a Twitter account.
Yeah. So for reasons I don't fully understand, I think are foolish, corporations still to this day really treat Twitter complaints as like escalated, like, oh, that's the worst possible scenario. If you were to create a Twitter account today, you'd have zero followers. That means any tweet you sent out, even, if you do at AT&T and maybe do all of the ads you can find that are AT&T corporate, are not being seen by anybody except the people you're sending it to. They still will freak out. They still,
okay.
This, I don't know how much longer this magic power of Twitter is going to last because it's completely absurd, but that's certainly one route. They are very nervous about social media. They don't want to get a bad reputation in social media.
Okay.
Although I have to say, I had a problem with Comcast some years ago. This was 6 or 7 years ago. And I have, at the time, I probably had 500,000 Twitter followers. And I tweeted something. And I did get a call from the Comcast office of the executive. That's that's Brian Roberts, the CEO's office. But instead of saying, how can we fix this? They said, can you stop tweeting?
Oh,
So maybe that was 7 years ago. Maybe they're more savvy, but it's been my experience that for some reason a tweet carries extra weight. Facebook tweet, Instagram, they're really worried about getting a bad reputation in social media. And I guess the reason is it can escalate. As we have seen time and time again, even though Twitter has only, as a small percentage of U.S. users, and mostly media, but for some reason that carries a lot of weight. Then you did the right thing. You wrote to the CEO. Is it Randall Stephenson still? I can't remember who the CEO is of AT&T.
Mr. Randall Stephenson. I even wrote.
So by doing that, you're in theory escalating, but he's palming it off on an 800 number. When you talk to support, always escalate there. Say, may I talk to a supervisor? Be polite. Usually you can get out of these. But I have to tell you, they're not required to. By your own admission, you use that data. And then I would immediately stop using whatever plan you're using. And everybody right now should look at their data plan, because these things happen, especially on an iPhone. It's very difficult to find all the places. There is a list of things that use cellular data in your settings. And I would just turn everything off if this is something you're worried about. But it's tricky. It's tricky. And by the way, iPhone usage, cellular usage may not match the companies, and they're going to ignore what your iPhone says. Because we now, with these smartphones, and the iPhone's really a big offender, use so much data all the time. It really is worth checking this and maybe getting a plan that doesn't ding you, doesn't charge you for excess usage, just slows you down. Nobody has a real unlimited plan, or at least not that I know of, where it doesn't even slow you down. I use 100 gigabytes, no problem. I don't think anybody does that anymore. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. My phone number, if you have a question or want to help somebody you hear call on the show, 8888-ASK-LEO. Yeah, that's one thing I love about Project Fi, and I hit this. They charge you $10 a gigabyte for up to 6 gigabytes. And then after 6 gigabytes, they say, all right, we're just going to not charge you anymore. I suppose at some point they throttle. I haven't really investigated that. But when I was traveling in Europe, we were using Fi because it's free. You don't pay an extra for the usage overseas. And I pretty quickly racked up 6 gigabytes, and they said, nope. That's it. Your bill isn't going to go over $80 because you pay $20 on the Google Fi service for unlimited texts and phone calls. And the texts are still free internationally, which is nice. Phone calls, I think, are 20 cents a minute or something. And then $10 a gigabyte, but it will never go over $60 for data. So that's $80 total, which I like. Yeah, I'm sure they throttle at some point. I don't know what that point is. So I like this. This is the Google Stand. I'll show this on the new screensavers. I'm going to review the Pixel. So you put the Pixel on this Google charging stand. It doesn't plug in. It just, just charges. And then it goes into stand mode. You know what would be interesting? Let's see if it charges this way. It does. That's good, because you might want to have it in that mode. And then a bit it's going to go into screen. It does a slideshow, which is fun. It also has a clock. It does special stuff. You have settings. I don't know why it's not kicking in. You have settings in here for the stand. Under connected devices, Pixel Stand. You can say... screen off when dark, do not disturb while docked. You could say use it as a photo frame, and you can select the albums that you want to use for the photo frame. So right now I'm just using like pictures of my lovely wife, but what I really wish it would do is say all pictures of your wife. That would be nice. I could do that. Rediscover this day. That's good. I have you and me, babe. Which is me and my wife. these are all trips. Oh, wallpaper's good. Wedding photos. Henry graduates. So those are the, then those are going to be in the photo stand. And then there's, this is cool, sunrise alarm gradually lights up the screen 15 minutes before alarm. So the idea is you put this on your stand. I like it that I can do it sideways. And then it becomes kind of like a little photo frame. Someday, somehow, eventually, what's that? Leo Laporte. Yeah. The tech guy. Music provided by our musical director, our funky, funky musical director, Michael Cozio. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Back to the phones. We go line four now. Kevin in Denver. Hi, Kevin.
Leo, my hero. Man, I can't believe I'm talking
to
you.
Yay. Thanks for calling.
I am looking to take all of our old family 8mm Super 8 movies and convert them to digital. Oh. It's not something that I want to send out to a service. I've looked into that. There's some good ones right here locally. But for what I'm going to pay, some of the prices of these machines I could purchase myself and have it for other friends to use, whatever the case may be. And I'm wondering if you would recommend one of those units more so than the other?
Well, to my knowledge, all the units work roughly the same, which is you need a projector, a Super 8 projector, because it's film, right? You've got negatives. You've got canisters, right?
Yep, I've got the film reels.
The reels. So you've got to have a projector. And as far as I know, all these things work the same. You project it on a screen, and then you use a camcorder, or you could use a camera phone, anything that could record video, and you record the screen.
That is one way, and they do have digital converters now where you actually put the film on this unit. It runs through the unit and it scans each, you know.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at the, yeah, you're right, the like the Wolverine.
Yep.
Yeah.
And there's different ones out there, different prices, and I didn't know if you
I don't have any experience, but I'm sure somebody listening does. These are doing the same thing, by the way. It's just that instead of projecting on a screen and shooting the screen, they're running. You still have to, in effect, project it. You know, converting analog to digital requires the playback of the analog and then somehow capturing it. So they're doing it on a, you know, they're still doing it internally on a screen. It's just, you know, you don't have to have the complicated setup. I'm looking at the Wolverine, $300. That is a lot cheaper. That's probably what people are using at these conversion things, you know, these places.
Yeah,
they just have something maybe a little more, a little bigger, more professional, because they're probably doing a lot more than you are. How many reels do you have?
Oh, I've got a lot.
Yeah. So that's the other thing. Don't forget to factor in your time. You have to do these in real time. So for every hour of film, it's going to be an hour, no more, but an hour of, you know, playing the film back. These also, it looks like, will play out to a TV, so you can watch as you're going. What I would do if we don't get somebody to call back, is read the reviews. The Wolverine has some pretty positive reviews. More than half are 4-star. So that's, you know, and I find the Amazon reviews pretty useful. If you ignore the, you know, obvious fluff that is competitors or negatives that are from competitors, you know, take off the top and the bottom. Usually they're pretty accurate. And this Wolverine has quite a few reviews. So the number is also relevant. There are 358 reviews, 4.2 out of 5 stars. I'm just looking to see if anybody in the chat room has any experience with it. I don't see it. But somebody, if you do go in the chat room or go in the, call the number 8888 Ask Leo, or you can use our website. That means that you won't get your answer right away, Kevin. You'll have to check techguylabs.com in a few days. But people can leave comments there, too. And we don't charge for access to the website. That's free. There's no subscription. We do ask you to log in with your Google or Facebook or Twitter or account just during comments, so just to keep spammers out. It's a little speed bump for spammers, but we don't use that information in any way. So if you have a recommendation, something you used, some actual experience, and you want to share that with Kevin, there's the three ways you can do it: chat room, phone, or the website, techguylabs.com. Yeah, these, I mean, they've got to be doing exactly the same thing, which is essentially play the movie back using a projector. You're going to have a bulb in there. And then, actually, they say it's an LED on the Wolverine. And then it's going to project it onto something. It probably, if you're not doing it on a screen, you're doing it on a sensor, a camera sensor, which actually makes a lot of sense. Why not do it directly? And shooting video, in effect, of that playback. So this is a pretty cool device. And I like the name, the Wolverine. Kodak also does the same thing, a little less expensive. Remember, if you see the name Kodak on something, it's not Eastman Kodak, Rochester, New York, the folks who made Kodak film. They kind of went belly up, and it's most likely some Chinese company that bought the name. Kodak Scanza. This looks pretty good. This looks like it'll do the job. Then there's the Jumble. It range from $89 to $300. My guess is the cheaper one's not going to be as robust. And if you have lots of stuff, you're going to want to get something that's going to handle it all for a long time. The British Amazon site reviews do not recommend it for films, just 35mm slides. I think he's talking about the Scanza. I'm just looking at the chat room's stuff. Really, what we'd like is somebody who has real experience. That's what I like about Amazon, especially if you can get a verified review. Gail, Covina, California. Hi, Gail. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hi, Gail.
Oh, hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. Okay, it's been a long time since I've talked to you, and I have a question. I have a desktop, an HP desktop, that is Windows 8.1, and it has, because it's a, well, I'm assuming because it's a desktop, it's got audio, but it doesn't have, you know, I can't.
You have a headphone jack, right?
No, I don't. Somebody told me it doesn't have the capability of doing like speech recognition or dictation but I don't know that for sure.
Yeah, almost all laptops do, but desktops, you're right, often don't. A desktop, is it one of those HP all-in-ones, like a screen and computer all attached? Desktops typically will have on the back... they'll have a sound card on the back. They'll have a microphone and a speaker jack and that kind of thing on the back. Do you have that?
I don't know.
I bet you do. So turn around and look on the back. There'll be a number of small holes, and one of them is for a microphone. You can go out and get an inexpensive microphone. And then Windows 8.1, I don't know, but Windows 10, certainly, you have Cortana. You can talk to her, and she'll respond and all sorts of stuff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey,
so look on. Okay, I had to take a break. Sorry. Look on the back. Is it a tower? Is it like a box?
It's a tower.
Yeah.
It's an HP NV700.
Okay, let me look real quickly. It certainly will have a on the back. Do you have it hooked up to speakers?
I have it hooked up to some wonderful speakers.
Okay, so look where the speakers go, and there should be in that same area a pink one, a pink little pink hole. That is the microphone.
Okay.
Let me just look.
So
here.
I would need.
Yeah, they have. Yeah, they have. This has a right in the back there, and then, so you need to get a microphone that would go into that.
Okay, so it doesn't have to be the headset kind of thing, but I can just get like a microphone.
Headsets tend to be better, but it doesn't have to be. What you want to stay away from is there are really cheap like. Microphones that aren't very good. So, now maybe they're USB speakers, but I don't think so. Let me just look and see what's.
These I don't think are USB.
Look where they're connected. If there should be on the back, I haven't bought a recent tower in a long time.
Yeah,
but for many years they had basically a sound card in the back there, which had microphone and speaker inputs and speaker outputs. So if it has that, then you can buy an inexpensive microphone. It has to have that kind of, mini jack for it.
Yeah, my speakers are plugging directly into the tower.
But where?
Where?
Like into a USB port?
No, into one of those little jacks.
Yeah, so next to it there'll be another jack that's pink. That is a microphone.
Yes.
The other way you can go is, and it would give you better quality, is a USB microphone. And you certainly have USB ports on there.
Oh, yeah.
And, if you want, if you were going to do a podcast, I would get a good USB microphone from a company called, say, Rode, R-O-D-E. But if you're not doing a podcast, you just want to do speech recognition, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to dictate?
Yeah. I want to dictate.
A lot of the dictation software like Dragon, naturally speaking, come with headsets, but I don't think you really need a headset. The headset is only if you're going to do a lot of. I think a little microphone on a stand right next to the computer would be the best solution, right?
Okay.
Yeah, if you want the best ones, they're not expensive, about $100. Go to Rode. And get a USB mic. That will certainly work whether you have a headphone jack or not.
Okay. Let me just say, because I do have a laptop and I am able to use the speech recognition, but I'm having to put my nose, right on the monitor.
Yeah. So you want a better microphone. And by getting an external microphone, you can put it closer to you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
Okay. Have fun. All right.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
He's Johnny Jett. He is our traveling guy at johnnyjett.com. He joins us each week to tell us how to travel better with technology. Have you ever been to Reno or Fargo?
I've been to Reno. I've never been to Fargo. Been to Wichita.
I've never been to Fargo either. I think you and I, road trip, let's go to Fargo. But let's wait till summer.
North Dakota is one of the few states I haven't been to.
I think it's South Dakota where the Mount Rushmore is, right? Or is it North
Correct.
Dakota?
Correct. South Dakota. It's South Dakota. Yeah. I've been there.
So there's really no reason to go to North Dakota.
Well, I don't know about that. But,
unless you have family there.
Teddy Roosevelt has a great park there. So.
Let's go. Okay. Come this summer, you, me, we'll go to the park.
That's great.
We'll add a state.
We'll do the broadcast from.
Yeah, because it's one of the few states I've not been to either. You're right.
I've been to 47. So
holy cow. Well, you got to get to those last three.
My son Jack has been to 20.
That's impressive.
And he's two.
Holy cow. So you're not at home, though. You're in Toronto right now.
I'm in Toronto. We flew, we got in a couple nights ago from London, flew British Airways. It's a 7-hour flight on a brand new 787 Dreamliner.
Liner.
We flew in. We flew to London from Bermuda, which was on an old 777-200. But
what's your favorite plane?
Well, the 787 is very nice, but I like the A350. The A380 is pretty nice if you're upstairs.
You're an Airbus guy, huh?
No, I mean, I'm more Boeing because Boeing actually most of the flight attendants tell me that Boeings are the ones that are least likely to break down. The Airbuses break down more. So I was like, really? So I try and book a lot of Boeing flights, but 787s are great. 777-300 is one of my favorite planes, too.
So you're really – one of the things he's very upset about is that the mega lottery, whatever it is, Mega Millions, is now at $1.6 billion.
Yes.
Which means you could take the cash and have $904 million.
I could definitely live well on that. We would be flying every week somewhere on a private jet.
So your problem is you're in Canada and you can't buy it.
I am going to
volunteer. I'm going to run over to the 7-Eleven and I'll get you a ticket. Should I just use the automatic? I don't even know how this works. I have literally never done this.
Really? Well, I'll text you my numbers.
Oh, you have numbers.
I don't normally play. The only time I ever play is when it hits, 500,000, a million.
You do know that you have zero chance of winning. I mean, it's not exactly zero, but it is so close to zero, that might as well be zero. You do know that, right?
I rarely ever play, but actually I tweeted it.
And you also know that the bigger the jackpot, the more people play, the lower your odds of winning are.
Well, I would think of the chances of more people winning it. So the less money you would win, but the more.
Well, that's what happens. It gets divvied up. That's right.
I won yesterday, and that was $1 billion.
Okay, but then you have to promise me you will continue to do this show if you win $1 billion.
Heck yeah. But someone told me that you could buy it from myillinoislottery.com, which is supposed to be their state lottery. I don't know. So I was just trying to find out if I can buy it.
There you go. So the odds of winning the jackpot are 1 in 302 million. That can't be right. No. I guess that's how many tickets they expect to sell.
Well, I don't know.
That's a lot of tickets. That's a ton. I don't believe in this stuff. I think your chance of winning is zero. And the problem is your chance of getting hit by lightning is dramatically higher. Significantly higher. Your chance of getting eaten by a shark is significantly higher.
For sure. And actually, I pride myself in telling people how you can travel for cheap, or at least cheaper.
You just buy your jet. You'd have the Johnny Jet.
Yeah, that would be nice. But one way people can save money is by taking public transportation.
I'm a big believer in that, yes.
And actually, that's why I tell people to pack light, because that way you can take public transportation, save money, save time. A lot of cities, you know, the traffic is so bad.
Yeah, like when I get to JFK, I would love to take the train into town, but it requires a transfer. And if I've got bags, I don't want to schlep them.
For sure.
If I just had a little laptop, it would be easy.
Yeah, if you fly to JFK, you jump on the air train to Jamaica Station. That's what I usually do. And then you transfer to the E train, and it's literally 1 hour door to door. But if you have a lot of bags, it is not easy.
You don't want to do that.
And if you go to LaGuardia, there's no train, so you have to take the bus. But Newark, there is a train, which is good. But Chicago, I almost always take the train because it's right underneath the airport. And so even if you do have a big bag, like I now travel with thanks to my little guy, it makes it a lot easier. But my app this week is London Tube Map, since I just came in from London.
Yes.
17 million people have downloaded this app.
Wow.
And it's interactive, so it will tell you if you have a connection. You can use it without a connection, but if you do have a connection, a cellular connection, it will let you know if there's any disruptions, which unfortunately oftentimes there are with the underground. But you can be notified beforehand, and that way you're not wasting your time or being stuck. And with pretty much any transportation, public transportation around the world, New York, London, Chicago, you want to avoid rush hour. I mean, in London, they pack them in. In Japan, they really pack them in. So, you know, my tip is always avoid rush hour, in no matter which city you're in. And also, like in New York City, when I'm in New York or in London, I always go to the last car because I always find that least likely to be packed.
Interesting. Okay.
But this will give you, you know, step-by-step directions, this app. And it's easy to use.
Nice.
And they have it for different cities as well, the makers of it.
Nice.
So I definitely recommend this. And so many people are going to London, and it's a fantastic city, as everyone knows.
Oh, I love London. And I do love the tube. It's a great way to get around. And you know what's amazing in London? Everybody in the underground is wearing white gloves and a top hat. It's just dramatic.
I miss that part.
Yeah.
All
right, good. Tube map, it's called. London Underground.
And so last week I mentioned – I had 3 seconds, basically. I told you where I was staying, londonperfect.com.
Yes.
So it's, you know, this is not cheap. These are luxury apartments, but they're always in the best locations, the best areas. And what makes them different than Airbnb and HomeAway and VRBO is that you're not renting someone's apartment that's, you know, has all their pictures and clothes and all that stuff. And if something goes wrong, you know, if you get locked out, sometimes you can't find the people. A lot of times they're on vacation.
Right.
But with these guys is that, and they have it in Paris and in Bali and Italy, they have an office around the corner, not around the corner, but in the same city, and they will come and bring you a key. And they meet you when they have a greeter, which really helps to show you around and to give you the key. I mean, the one time I did Airbnb, which actually was in London, I loved it, but you know, the guy is like, you know, the key's going to be underneath the trash can.
Are these not owned by people? These are only for rentals, or are they?
They're only for rentals. Well, most of their properties are just used for vacation rentals.
Ah, So you can stay in London in Guy Ritchie and Madonna's former London home.
Exactly. Yes.
My wife would enjoy that. She's a Madonna fan. That'd be kind of fun.
Right.
But it's got to be very expensive.
Well, the one we were in was a 3-bedroom, and it was about, you know, $500 and something a night.
Well, that's cheaper than a hotel in London.
Especially if you're traveling with a couple with a large family or two couples, you know, it could be a lot cheaper.
So
it's a great choice. What I love about it is you really do live like a local. That's what I like about renting apartments once in a while. And I've really started liking them a lot more with Jack because, you know, we have a kitchen.
Oh, with a baby, you need to have somewhere that's more like a house.
Screaming in the middle of the night sometimes, you know, and you're walking within distance to supermarkets, cafes, parks. We were right next to Kensington Gardens.
Oh, I love that. That's one of my favorite
amazing
areas.
Place to walk around.
LondonPerfect.com. And they have Paris and Bali and Florence. I'm going to do this in Florence, I think. It sounds wonderful. That's my dream anyway. Johnny Jett, he is our traveling guy. Follow him on the Twitter and the Instagram or go to johnnyjett.com and subscribe to his travel newsletter. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, $500 a night is less than a hotel. I guess the difference is the hotel, you got maid service and there's a...
Yeah, so you have to take the garbage
downstairs.
Out. Yeah. You have to take the garbage out. You have to make your own beds.
Oh, listen, heaven forfend.
When I'm in the hotel, I use the same towel every night.
I do too. I don't want to,
I don't want my sheets changed.
No.
I actually
put the do not disturb up on the.
Exactly. I don't want people coming to my room. So, except to empty the trash, you know, Jack's diapers and things like that.
Yeah.
But, anyway, cool. I also forgot to mention, by the way, that last week I said 1 in 3 Americans have a special need, and my numbers were way off. It's more like 1 in 9, not 1 in 3.
Close enough.
I think
enough.
It's 15% population.
I wear glasses. So. Add me to that list. Close enough.
So I just clarify that. Right. I wasn't wrong.
I don't think anybody's yelling at you for that.
No, but I saw some comments in the chat room. I always read the chat room afterwards just to see. And I was like, oh, my God, I misspoke.
So the Illinois Lottery Online, you have to be an Illinois resident.
Okay. See, that's what I was wondering because I was about to buy some tickets. And I was like, you know what? My luck, again, I would have won. And then they're like, sorry.
But can you do Mega Millions online on the California Lottery site? Maybe you can because you're a California resident.
Good. That's why you're the ticket.
Check a ticket. No, it doesn't look like you can.
Yeah, I didn't think you could.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's funny to watch people just go crazy when these lottery numbers go so high. I just completely tune it out because it's a tax on the math challenged. It really is. Somebody's going to win. Yeah, not you. I guess, though, if the person who won had that attitude, then she wouldn't win either. Nobody won last week, right? Yeah. I'm supposed to be the tech guy. I'm supposed to be savvy about these kinds of things. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. James DeRuvo, who writes our chat notes, I didn't think he'd be here today, but James has said that he has the Kodak Scanza, and while it works, it does not do film. It just does stills from film. So it's really a still capture device. So don't get that. But so far, I haven't seen anybody say anything about... any of the Wolverine Super 8 scanner. These are all kind of products with a very limited future, right? I hope. At some point, we're going to get to the point where nobody has any VHS tapes or Super 8 or film to scan, and it's just going to, I guess, fade away. But it's good to get this digitized while you can. The nice thing about bits, once you get stuff like this digitized, bits are cheap. You can store it forever. And most importantly, your kids won't have to clean it out. You know, they'll just inherit the hard drive or not. And they can. It's easier for them to ignore. Let's put it that way. Line 3, Jeff Sunland, California. Hello, Jeff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Okay, I've got a situation I'm hoping you can help me with. I have a newer TV. It's a Vizio. It's a model M43C as in Charlie 1. And it's the 4K or Ultra, 4 Ultra HD, whatever that stuff is now. It's a very nice TV. And I have a very nice Bose surround system. My problem is I got rid of my cable TV service, and I used to be able to hook up my Bose surround system through my cable box and be able to receive surround sound for the TV. Now that is gone. My current TV has no audio out, so am I unable to use my surround sound system?
Does it have, because this is the way most of these systems now connect, does it have optical out of the TV? Do you even know what an optical connector looks like? They're kind of funny looking.
I do, and I got, I was ready for this. I got the manual. I brought it with me.
It does have, I'm looking at it right now, it says it has SPDIF, digital audio out, as well as analog audio out. So, but you'd want the digital, the SPDIF, the optical out. And your Bose should have optical in.
Let me see, the back of the TV, there's an Ethernet cable.
Yeah. No, I'm looking at the specs on the Vizio site for the M-Series.
Oh, you are. Yeah. Oh, okay.
It has it's a funny looking thing. It may not even look like a connector because usually there's a cover over it, and it's a little hatch that's a flexible hatch that you can push out of the way.
Okay.
But at that thing, you'll need to get a special cable, a SPDIF cable, Toslink cable that takes. That has the right connection on either end. You also have to check the Bose to make sure it has a similar thing. And then the Bose you'll have to set to get its audio optically from the TV set. But
okay, so could you describe or name that cable?
Yeah, well, it depends. And unfortunately, this is a little more complicated. It depends on the kinds of connectors because optical can be – sometimes it's a Toslink, which is that little plastic, it'll be a black plastic hatch, which you can kind of look inside. It looks like kind of a train tunnel a little bit. You can look inside and there'll be light there. If it's that, then you need a jack that is designed for that. It'll be keyed to fit that. But it can also be, optical can also unfortunately come as a coaxial cable, like an RCA jack. And it might be that. And it can also come as what looks like a headphone jack. And it can also be that. So you'll have to figure out what's at either end, what the Bose is expecting and what the TV offers, and get a cable that matches both of those ends. But there'll be it's called an optical cable, so you just need to match the kinds of ends. That's all.
Okay, and do they make or sell adapters, you know, if I can't find a cable?
You'll be able to find a cable. These are all three very common forms of connection. Once you figure out what you need, you can go on to Amazon and get the right cable cheaply. They're not expensive.
Okay, and one more quick question. If you're looking at the specs on the TV, you're one up on me there. Can you tell me what the name of that output is on the back of the TV, if it's labeled at all?
It may not have a name. If it does, it'll be SPDIF.
SPDIF.
It might say digital. Okay. But, yeah, if you have the manual, you can look and you'll see in the manual they'll have a picture of it. And that will give you some idea of what kind of connection. If it looks like the train tunnel, then you'll need that particular kind of Toslink connector. And I don't remember what the Bose has on it. But you should be able to do that connection. The Bose expects... it depends which Bose you have, but if you have the expensive one, it is kind of an AV receiver plus amplifier for your surround sound. So it can handle a lot of different kinds of inputs. Another way you might be able to do it is with something called the ARC or audio return channel. One of your HDMI connectors might be labeled ARC. If it is, that also is audio out, and that could go in as the input for the Bose. But usually I prefer to do optical.
Oh, I see it. Yeah, okay, on the back of the TV.
Yeah, you found it.
I did find it. Excellent. I found the right picture in the manual, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure the Bose will have the same thing. You just have to get the right connectors to match them up.
Okay, is that the Radio Shack kind of thing?
Or? Yeah, if only Radio Shack still existed. I go on Amazon nowadays. The other place that, you know, is a... Amazon's the easiest, to be honest. I used to recommend Monoprice, and I still do, monoprice.com. But most people have Amazon accounts, and frankly, it's just as easy to get it there. But MonoPrice is a good place to get inexpensive cables, and they have any kind of cable you could ever want.
And one last question. You know, I'm using a component cable on this TV.
Yeah.
Is there a big difference if I upgrade to HDMI? Am I going to notice the difference visually?
Yes. Always use digital. So component is analog. It's it's high def analog, but it's analog. Always use digital if you can. Because that's an LCD TV. It wants a digital input. Otherwise, it has to convert the analog input into digital. And there'll always be a little slop, a little mess up. It'll be a little softer than it would be if you did digital, which will be a one-to-one. You know, it says turn this pixel on, turn that pixel off. That's what you want, digital.
Okay, 10-4.
All right. Hey, somebody in the chat room has put up a lovely little picture, if you want, for the different kinds of SPDIF or Toslink connectors. The Toslink is the one that looks like a train tunnel. The SPDIF is the one that looks like an RCA connector. And then I have seen, I was kind of surprised, I think the Chromecast Audio had this, one that looks like it's a headphone jack. It's a normal 3.5 millimeter headphone jack that can handle an analog headphone. But if you have the right kind of cable, it can also be optical. So those are the three different ways I've seen it. I think on the back of a TV, you're much, and it looks like it says the SPDIF, so that's SPDIF. That's the one that looks like a coax. I bet you it's SPDIF to Toslink. Be my guess. That's what they'd put on the back of the Bose is Toslink, but who knows? What a world we live in. It's connector mania. The good thing about connectors is there's always another one. It's just 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Another hour to come. Lots more to talk about. No one's asked me about the Google phone. I think the real interest, of course, is the iPhone. That's the big seller. Last year, they said Google sold 10 or 11 million Pixel phones. That's fewer phones than Apple sells in 1 week. 1 week. So the iPhone is really the phone to look at. And I've been using the iPhone XS Max. The XR comes out on Friday. I'll be talking about that as well probably next weekend. That actually, if it looks to be, anyway, spec-wise, to be the iPhone you probably want. Less expensive, starts at $750. It's an LCD screen, not an OLED screen. But it's a very high-quality LCD screen. And it only has one lens instead of the dual-lens, you know, telephoto camera on the back of it. But I think that's probably fine, too. I think that for $750, that's probably I bet you that's the one they sell like crazy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Tech Guy Podcast brought to you this week by Capterra. Capterra is so cool. People call all the time on the show and say, I have a business, whatever it is, a sign painting business, and I need software to manage my customers. Or I'm a vet, and I need management software for the office, a dentist, a doctor, you know, customer relationship management, website design software, any kind of software you use in business. The problem is if you're calling the tech guy to ask, I don't know. I mean, I have some things that I use, but I don't use everything. There's literally thousands of programs out there. Maybe you Google it. What are you going to get? A bunch of a list you don't know what to believe. Or you go to Capterra.com. Capterra has over 600 categories of business software with real reviews by actual users. They have easy ways to compare. And now they're offering you the big book of free software free. Of course, you couldn't charge for the big book of free. It's a free ebook, and it is a list of over 300 absolutely free software tools, plus the reviews, the checklists, everything you need to know. And you don't have to ask your boss for a penny. It's absolutely free. You can get it right now. It's free from them to you, Capterra.com/tech guy. Whether you're looking for a project management tool or e-commerce software or an email marketing solution, Capterra's big book of free software has something for you. And it is waiting at Capterra.com/tech guy. That's Capterra.com/tech guy. They have also the search engines there too, and you can use that for free. I love it. They don't charge you a penny. Capterra.com/tech guy. Join the millions who use Capterra every month and get your free ebook. Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yeah, time to talk computers and the internet. And we got home theater. We got digital photography. We have smartphones. We can talk about smart watches. The new iPads are coming. The new iPads are coming. Just ordered a, I forgot to yesterday, the iPhone XR, the low end, and yet still pretty high end Apple iPhone that wasn't available when they made the announcements last month, but just became available for order yesterday and is going to be delivered on Friday, the XR. My friend Renee Ritchie calls it the banana phone because it's they have six colors, including a banana yellow. I did not order the banana yellow, although that might be kind of fun, huh? I got the product red. I like the red. LCD screen, as I was mentioning, a single lens instead of dual lens, but otherwise internally exactly the same as the iPhone XS. And a little bit smaller, but it's funny because of this new design, this bezel-less design, the phone itself is a little smaller than an iPhone 8, but it has the screen size of an iPhone 8 Plus, I think, right? And I'll have a review for you next week. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. What color would you get? they're kind of, I like the colors. They're kind of pretty. They're kind of cool. Let me see what they are. Usually these, what I love about tech companies is they don't say, you know, black, white, and yellow. They'll say, well, Google did not black, not white, not yellow, not pink. I guess they had pink, right? Yeah. Not black, not white, not, but not pink, except that they are exactly that, black, white, and pink. Does Apple play that game with colors? There's some beautiful, it looks like some beautiful choices. There's black, there's white, but there's also yellow, the banana phone. Looks like they have a pink one, too, and a baby blue and a red. Oh, that's pretty. Oh, that's pretty. What colors, though? What do they call them? Do they have names? No. White, black, blue, yellow, coral. Okay. It is more coral than pink. That's fair. And product red. 8888 Ask Leo. On with the calls we go. Ron in Newport, PA is next. Hello, Ron.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, I have enjoyed your program on Tech TV years ago.
Oh, go. Those are the good old days, yeah.
But anyhow, I'm having a problem with Thunderbird. The ISP has improved their security, and I spent an hour and a half on the phone with them, and worked the first day. Next day, it does not work. So is there an alternative program to use?
Yeah, I mean,
this program?
Thunderbird, unfortunately, has been abandoned by its developers. So you're on Windows?
Yes, Windows 10.
Yeah. What is it that you like about Thunderbird? I can make some alternative choices for you, but I'm kind of curious what you're looking for in an email package.
Filter is one thing I like in that package.
Yeah, they have great filtering capabilities. I'm not sure. I mean, I should also, to be fair, say that it should work. I don't know why it's not working. If you've got the settings all correct, your internet service provider walked you through them, told you the name of this, what you need for it to work is the type of server, which I presume is IMAP or IMAP, right?
Right.
Yeah, and you need then the server address. Sometimes there are two servers, IMAP for receiving mail and SMTP for sending mail. That's Simple Mail Transport Protocol. And then you'll need the addresses of the names of each server. Typically, it'll be like imap.yourcompany.net or something like that. But sometimes they're different. You got to get those names right. The other thing that sometimes can get a little fiddly is the way that you log on to that. And most internet service providers don't want people who are not customers to send mail through their servers. So they're usually most finicky about outbound. Is it the outbound you're having trouble with, or both inbound and outbound?
I cannot get any inbound at all.
Can't get any inbound either.
Outbound.
Okay. So make sure you've got the right form of login. There's, last count, I think, five different ways that you can log into an email server. So I hope they told you What method to use, typically password for an internet service provider. You also have to have the right port, and I hope they told you the proper port. The standard ports aren't always the right port to use. Everybody's different. Now, your internet service provider will also have a page somewhere on how to configure your email with all of those numbers, and I would check that page. Maybe the person on the phone didn't give you all the correct information. However,
I went and did a friend's email the other day, and with the new information, no problem. But this Thunderbird just does not work for me.
Yeah. Well, again, make sure you get all the settings, not just a few of them. And you can get that if you go to the support pages on your internet service provider. However, on Windows, there are other choices for email out there. Lots of them. Pegasus, and I used Claws for a while, and you know, there's, of course, Microsoft's own choices, which I'm not fond of, but Outlook and the mail that comes with Windows, all of them should work with your internet service provider. Internet service providers generally want, you know, to work with the widest possible variety. Although increasingly, and I don't like this much, they're doing web-based email. And they say, oh, just use your browser and browse to mail.cox.com or whatever. And I'm like you. I want to download my mail. I like to have it on my system. For you know, searching and so forth. So, alternatives to Thunderbird, quite a few. I'm trying to remember which one I like the best. I think I was a big fan of Pegasus Mail, but I don't know if that's the most recent one I've been using. Let's see. Probably you don't want to buy one. I don't think there's any reason to buy one. Eudora, sad to say, is long gone. Oh, The Bat. I think that was the one I used the most recently. The Bat. Terrible name. And it's not free, but boy, was that powerful. And if you like filtering, I think that there are that The Bat and some of these others maybe are even better at filtering. So The Bat is from RITlabs.com, and it's got the worst name ever. It's The Bat exclamation mark, but it is very, very powerful. You can try it before you buy it. It might be worth a try, and you know, it'll also give you some confidence that you've set it up right. If you can set up The Bat and it sends and receives mail, then you've got all the right settings, and maybe there is something going on with Thunderbird. The Bat Home is $27. The Bat Professional, $59. And I use that for a long time. I think on Mac, I use a program. I don't use the Apple Mail anymore. I use a program called MailMate, which I'm also quite fond of. There's some good choices out there. But make sure you got the settings right. That's the first thing to do. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a little time out. And I will return, and we'll answer more of your calls. 8888-ASK-LEO. And don't forget, techguylabs.com. That's where all the answers live all week long. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. On we go. With the show, Alexander in Los Angeles. Hello, Alexander.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. One of the reasons I'm good is I use a piece of software that you may know about, and if you don't, I'll bet you're going to love it. It's called FakeSpot.
FakeSpot? I do not know about it.
You've got to know about it because I have it in my browser. It's completely safe, and the reason I use it is you brought up, and you bring up a lot, reviews on Amazon.
Yes.
Of course, you've got the fake reviews. You've got the reviews that are being written by competitors, by this sweatshop, wherever they have people writing fake reviews. This is a great algorithmic software. It's free. You go to fakespot.com, as you'll look now. And I have it in my browser, so if I'm getting something, anything, I always check, and 99% of the time, it can do an algorithm for
awesome.
A bunch of things that come up for you that say, hey, that review is possibly not really what it looks like.
Now, I see it says offers in-app purchases. Is it free or does it cost money to use?
Free. It's
okay.
Free. I've never paid a thing for it. And I have it up on my browser, and it's a little the little icon, and then you, once you're in Amazon, the thing you do is you go to Amazon, you want to buy something, you click on reviews, and now you're looking at people's reviews in Amazon. You're like, oh my God, this thing's being raved about. Or you get, you go to that thing, you know, you start the worst reviews first, and I like to do that, or the latest reviews first.
Yep.
But if there aren't, or even if there are just hundreds of reviews, or just a few, you hit the fake spot icon, and it just says, hold on, I'm going to do an algorithmic study of those reviews, and in seconds, and by the way, it works beyond Amazon. It works for, I think, a bunch of others. You're probably reading it right now.
I am trying it on Amazon as we speak. I installed the Chrome extension, because that's the easiest way for me to use it.
Yeah.
And I'm running it. So it says, thank you for using FakeSpot. You can analyze this page. So I'm running it on the reviews for these Wolverine.
Perfect.
Super 8 scanner, because somebody was curious about this.
Exactly.
And it still gives it a very good grade. This is good. You can trust reviews of this product. That's good.
And that's on the left side, it'll say what tells it to give it that grade.
Yeah.
So it's going to go, okay, it does a dumb thing where it tells you, oh, it uses this, the word film was used over and over again. Well, that's a duh, Ralph. But the rest...
It says, our analysis detected over 90% high quality reviews. This is fascinating, the way that they're doing it.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Yeah, I really like this. Yeah. FakeSpot.com. It probably be most useful, not so much on Amazon, which is, I think, cracked down quite a bit on bad reviews, but Yelp, which is kind of always an issue.
Yelp too.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
hey, thank you for the tip. That's a great one. Thank you.
Yeah, I use it on Amazon all the time. Have a great one. Thanks.
You too. Take care. Thanks, Alex. See ya.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Yep.
Now, here's the only thing I would say. Why is it free? Why is it free? Maybe the person who wrote this is a humanitarian, is an altruist, and just says, you know, the world needs this, I'm going to do it. They put a lot of effort into it, and they've got a nice website. They do a lot of analysis. Somebody's, you know, there's paying for a considerable amount of cloud computing time, not just for the website, but to do the analysis, because that's all done on a server in the cloud. And so then I rub my chin, and I stroke my chin, and I say, and this is, by the way, I want you all to do this. And most importantly, I want you to teach kids to do this, because kids are naturally trusting, right? They don't realize that there are bad people out there, greedy people. But it's a good question to ask when something's free. Well, how, especially because, and maybe this is one of the most important things to understand, is this stuff costs money. Then nobody has a website like this and a service like this, then they're not paying a lot of money, hundreds of dollars a day, maybe more. So is it just somebody with deep pockets who says, yeah, you know what? This is such an important, and this could be, it could be. I don't want to sound cynical. This is such an important thing to do that I'm going to give this away. Or is there something they're getting out of it? And my guess is that when you install this extension and you run it on stuff, it's probably looking at every page you go to. And that has some value. So the first thing, if before you install one of these things, you should do is read the privacy policy. Now, it is possible that the privacy policy is not accurate. But thank goodness there's in Europe, and I have mixed feelings about it, but there's the General Data Protection Regulation in Europe, GDPR. And there are in the United States similar legal protections like the Federal Trade Commission that do penalize lies in privacy statements. However, they got to catch you. But I think usually you can see. So let's just see here. What they do. When you use our service, we automatically collect the following information about you. Your device information, which includes but is not limited to information about your web browser, IP address, time zone, and, oh, this is an interesting one, some of the cookies that are installed on your device. That's probably, in all likelihood, that information is collected to uniquely identify you. To put a cookie that says, you know, they don't know I'm Leo Laporte, I'm 137-495-272-2104, but that's a unique identifier. And a lot of services will do that, because then the information they collect can be aggregated against that personality. And sometimes if services work together, they can maybe even figure out who you are. So there's that. Individual web pages are products that you view. They collect that. What websites or search terms referred to you to the service, and information about how you interact with the service. Well, they have to do that, right? Otherwise, they can't analyze the reviews. But they don't say limited to websites you're buying things at. So they are collecting information. Now, who are they? How do they use this? Well, do they, for instance, share your personal information? Oh, we share your personal information with third parties to help us use your personal information as described above. I don't know. Finally, we also may share your personal information to comply with applicable laws. That's all normal. As described above, we use your personal information to provide you with targeted advertisements or marketing communications. There you go. We now have found the smoking gun. How do they make money? Well, when you use their service, you put a extension in your browser, and every page you go to, every product you look at is recorded, and then they can use that to targeted ads or marketing communications. That makes sense. That makes sense. You can opt out of targeted advertising. That's good. Please note, we do not, this is important, alter our service data collection and practices when we see a do not track signal from your browser. They're saying, we do not honor do not track. That's a big deal. If you're using do not track, and if you know about do not track, most modern browsers will say, please don't track me. Chrome doesn't, but Firefox does. Please don't track me. They don't honor that. So I think you see the point here. Something's free. There's a reason. How are they making money? And are you okay with that? I'm not saying this is bad. I'm just saying, are you okay with that? Are you willing to make that trade? That's a lesson I think everybody needs to learn, especially young people who are very trusting, right? But interestingly, young people care a lot about their privacy. They ought to. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, always confused. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. Victor in Covina. Hello, Victor.
Hi, how you doing, Leo?
I am well. How are you?
Good, good. I have a quick question about my Wi-Fi system.
Sure.
My internet carrier's Spectrum, and I have a high speed. I guess it's over 200.
Oh, nice.
So when I have the Orbi whole house.
Very nice. You get most of the speed with an Orbi. That's probably the highest speed mesh system out there, the Netgear Orbi.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, if I go measuring the speeds in the various rooms on my cell phone, they're high. They're about 190, close
nice.
To 200.
Wow.
But my question is, why are my laptops are not reading that high of speeds, and they're between 15 and 30.
Yikes, that's terrible. That's quite a degradation. There are a number of different reasons for that. Of course, different Wi-Fi adapters have different capabilities. The antenna, where it is, the chipset itself, that's a particularly pathetic performance. How old are those laptops?
Well, it's a new Dell.
It's brand new, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
Brand new.
So that's the other issue is that, of course, Wi-Fi protocols have changed. We started with 802.11b, which was the slowest, and only on 2.4 gigahertz. We're currently at 802.11ac, which can do 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz. In fact, it can do two different ranges of the 5 gigahertz band and can handle much faster speeds. So some of that is also the protocol that the laptop can handle. I would expect a brand new Dell to have full AC compatibility. So you might check to make sure that you're running the latest driver and that the software, the Wi-Fi software in there is up to date. But also remember, as you know, where the antenna is, and nowadays nobody wants external antennas. That's going to affect it. Your distance from the server will affect it. Maybe it'll affect it more if it's got a bad antenna. If you're right next to the server, it should be closer to 200. I wouldn't expect 200 honestly, because they're, you know, normally with Wi-Fi, it's about half. But again, this is where the Orbi is pretty impressive. It's, it really does give you a lot of the full bandwidth available to you. So I'm amazed you're getting that much on a phone. That's really, really good.
Yeah, you know, I'm measuring between, like I said, with the phones. In fact, you know, Netflix, Xbox, and upper bedrooms on the second floor, they don't lag anymore. They used to lag before, but with, once I installed this Orbi, there's no lagging. But I just had that question about...
Speed test is one way to do it, but there are some really good Wi-Fi analysis tools out there for Windows, like Insider with two S's. That will help you. There's one called Wi-Fi Analyzer that's free on the Microsoft Store. NetCut is another one. Get one of these NetSpot. NetSpot's kind of cool because NetSpot will actually let you survey the house. So you can wander around with a laptop. It'll make heat maps saying where Wi-Fi is best and weakest. And so you may learn more. What you want to make sure is that you're on the best band, the 5 gigahertz band. And by the way, this is something that mesh routers do that people may not be aware of. They may look at this. The Orbi might be doing this. It might look at the different devices and say, you know, in order to give the best performance to, let's say, the guy in the living room watching Netflix, I'm going to give lower performance to the laptops that only need email. So it may be doing what we call bandwidth shaping as well, depending on the device. That's one of the things that is new in these mesh routers, and the Orbi is one of them. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing to be aware of.
Okay.
Maybe Insider is not the best choice. It's the one I use, but it's expensive. But I'll tell you what, I'll put a list of all the different tools that are out there for Wi-Fi analysis. That will help you better understand. You put that on your Dell, and that will help you better understand. It'll also tell you whether you're getting all the bands. You may not. That Dell may be only on 2.4 gigahertz, in which case 30 would be great.
Okay.
So that's another thing to look at. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. It used to be you could really measure your bandwidth, and it would be the same on all the devices. But now with these mesh routers, it absolutely isn't the case. That's what they're doing, what they're supposed to do, which is give each the bandwidth it deserves, it needs, from each according to their, what is it, the Communist Manifesto? Anyway, it's from each according to their abilities, to each according to their needs, something like that. 8888, Ask Leo. It's, you know, honestly, networking is something very advanced. We're doing it now. We're all becoming network gurus in the home because we have switches and routers and, you know, all sorts of stuff. But honestly, I mean, if you can find an IT professional who is a Wi-Fi guru, a wizard, he's worth his weight in gold. We have one. We have a very challenging Wi-Fi environment in the studio, 20 employees. Numerous virtual LANs, you know, we have one dedicated to on-air staff so they can have the best performance, one dedicated to guests. But we also have, multiple Wi-Fi devices, probably hundreds in this space. And so Russell, who's our genius, our local genius, has set us up with Ruckus, which are enterprise grade. Those are the ones you'll see in theaters and in ships and in hotels, the Ruckus routers, and each room has its own, and he spends a lot of time tweaking that. And so in order to get, you know, the best possible Wi-Fi, it can take some real skills. Those Wi-Fi analyzers, the heat map tool especially, will help you a little bit, help you get an idea of what's going on. We get amazing performance here because we have a 10 gigabit fiber connection to the internet. Now, it's shared among a lot of people and a lot of devices, but that's a lot of bandwidth, 10 billion bits a second. And we use it all, baby, every bit of it. Thank you to SonicNet for that 10 gigabit line. That is something else. Shelley, Palmdale, California is next. Hello, Shelley. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. Yeah, I hear you great.
Yeah. Okay, great. I'm just going nuts over here. I'm ready to pull my hair out. I've been messing with my PC since Tuesday night. I'm trying to get, So what I have is I have Windows 10, and I have I'm using the Microsoft Edge browser, and I could go on the internet. Everything's fine. I even had Spectrum check it all out, and they checked out the modem and the router and all that, and make sure it was working fine. It's all working fine, and I can't go anywhere. I can't go to any website, and it keeps saying that you can't reach this page or whatever. Excuse me. So I went to, I got some tech support. I actually paid for some third-party Google tech support, and they've been working with me. They've tried everything, and finally we actually just ended up resetting everything, wiping everything out, all the files, the programs, everything, thinking that that would do it, and it didn't do it. Same error message. So now...
Do you have security software running on your system?
I have Microsoft Trend or Micro Trend.
Yeah, okay.
Micro.
So the first thing I always suspect when people are having trouble getting around on the internet is the security software. Sometimes, especially when you get these... It's not just an antivirus. It's this entire security package. They often will get in the way. Trend Micro's decent. It's fine. I generally tell people you don't need any. Microsoft's Defender comes with Windows 10 and is more than adequate. You might try getting rid of that or disabling that and seeing if that helps. But there's so many things that can go wrong. I presume you've tried other browsers. Have you, for instance, installed Google Chrome just to see if it works?
I cannot even install it.
Oh, you can't get in. You can't get it. Yeah, yeah. You don't have another computer you could download it on. Yeah.
No, actually, that's what I'm going to try and do.
Hang on. We're going to take a break, but I'm going to do some personal support with you. See if I can point you in the right direction. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the Gizwiz, coming up. So you had the... Be very careful, by the way, when you Google tech support and you call somebody, because those guys could be the... really dangerous.
Yeah, you know, I didn't even realize it. I thought I was contacting Google, right? You know, and then down after I, of course, paid the money and everything, I realized they're like a third-party provider.
What was the name of the company? The problem with this is if I'm a bad guy, I buy Google ad placement to make sure that when somebody searches for tech support on Google, my company comes up. And instead of doing tech support, what I do is I get on people's computers and I install bad stuff. So,
you know, I didn't get the feeling that any of that was happening, actually. I spent so much time with these guys.
Good. Probably you're all right. I'm sure you're all right.
Probably all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of these. I just in future be careful about doing that because that is a recipe for disaster. He had you reinstall Windows?
Yeah, everything. He said everything.
How did you do that? Like, did you wipe your drive and start over?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the nuke. That's, by the way, the nuclear option. Sometimes is required. Right. Interesting that it didn't fix it. So in this case, it was not required. It wasn't the right answer, and you wasted a lot of energy doing something that wasn't very helpful.
I wasted like 3 days working on this already.
So he not only took your money, he wasted your time. So You can't get online. You're blaming the computer. Do you have other devices in the house that can get online?
Yeah, I can get online. That's not a problem, except I can't browse anywhere. I mean, it shows that I have internet service on this. And like I said,
can you get your email? Hold on. Can you get your email?
No.
Okay, you're not online then. It has nothing to do with your browser. You're not online. What do you mean?
Really?
Well, you can get online, but can you do anything that is involving the public internet? Like get email? No. It's not your browser. So you're not online. You think, I don't know, why do you think you're online? Because you see the Wi-Fi thing lit up or what make?
It says I'm connected.
Okay. All that means is you're connected to your router.
Oh.
You have Spectrum, and Spectrum comes into a box. Do you have any other boxes attached to that, or is it all in the Spectrum box?
It's all in the Spectrum box.
Okay. So your Spectrum box, they checked, and they said, well, we're sending you a signal. So the first thing you do when you can't get online is you unplug that Spectrum box. I'm sure they had you do this. You wait 10 seconds, you plug it in. Did they have you do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Because It could have nothing to do with your computer. That's why this guy wasn't helpful. It could have nothing to do with your computer. The fact that you're not online, in fact, tells me that it's not a problem with Edge. It may be a problem with your computer. It may be a problem with your internet access. It may be a problem with your router. So do you have any other devices in the house that get online, like a smartphone?
Yes. Yes, I have a smartphone and an iPad.
Okay. Is the Wi-Fi working on your iPad, for instance? Can you see the Wi-Fi and you can surf the net and get email?
Yes.
Okay, good. So that tells me, and you're sure that that's going through the Wi-Fi, not over the cellular network.
Oh, yeah. I'm absolutely sure.
Good. So that's a good diagnostic. Now we know that Spectrum is, in fact, okay, and that your Wi-Fi router is okay. So now we got to look at this computer, and you've done something good, which is reinstall Windows. That wasn't a complete waste because we now know it's not software. Could be the Trend Micro. Do you reinstall that? So if you have an Ethernet...
Well, wait a minute. Nothing was... He didn't reinstall anything. He just reset whatever that does.
Okay.
There's still programs that need to be reinstalled.
Okay. Hang on a second. We got to go back online.
Okay.
I got to hear percussion. More cowbell. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It is Disco Dick on the line here. Gizwiz Dick DiBartolo. He's Mad Magazine's maddest writer. We call him a gizmo wizard because he loves the gadgets. And he joins us each and every week on the show to help us enjoy gadgets too. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how are you, pal?
And we play the disco because he's a disco fool. I am well. How are you?
I'm very good.
Would you have worn at any time in your disco days a flannel shirt like you're wearing today?
Yeah.
Oh.
Probably this one.
I don't have a chance. I thought it was all satin, open to the navel with a, you know.
Oh, a little bit.
White
a little,
pants.
Yeah, well, now it's open to the second button.
Yeah, right.
As you age, you button
Yeah, up. Yeah, it goes up a little higher and higher. Pretty soon we'll be buttoning the top button.
A turtleneck.
Yeah,
a
turtleneck. Dickie D, what have you seen lately?
Oh, okay, so... You know, I've been doing things in, you know, last week it was 30,000, the week before 70,000. So every once in a while I get an email that says, yeah, you have anything for seniors? So I go on Amazon and I'm searching seniors and I find the giant digit alarm clock with USB charging, 9-inch display. And I figured this is going to wipe out the clock that Leo uses in the studio. So I get the clock. It's only $26. But when a little box comes, I'm a little bit disappointed. So it turns out...
The letters are big, not the box. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe you turn the box the long way. Maybe the digits... All right. So it turns out that it's really not even a 9-inch display measured the way you would a TV set.
What?
The digits are 3 inches high.
3 inches? They look big on the picture, but you can't.
Don't they? I am thinking I will not only be able to see this across the room.
3 inches?
I should be able to see this across the street. Okay. But it has a couple things that seniors might be interested in. It's sort of easy to set, okay?
But this is really deceptive. You know, they do have a smartphone next to it, so you can kind of tell it's not huge.
It's not huge. It's not huge. And the other thing that some people complained about, and I'm not crazy about it either. Oh, you know what? I'm looking at what you're looking at. They changed the photo.
Ah.
The original photo did not have any brand name on it.
Ah.
And some people complained and said, it looks so clean in the image, and I bought it, and now there's a big word Reacher on the bottom.
Yeah.
Oh, look, they changed it totally.
They're now showing the actual size. They say,
yes, exactly.
Yeah, 9-inch exactly. Diagonally.
Yeah, well, actually, it's 8 3/4, but I'm not arguing.
Who's counting? Who's counting?
Okay, so the fun thing is, and so see if you can guess what this is, okay? So... You hit mode and
they have a picture of this clock with a senior citizen. What they don't tell you is she's actually tiny. She's the smallest human ever.
Exactly.
It looks big next to her.
It does.
Yeah.
So when you're setting it, you hit mode and hours blink, you hit mode. Minutes blink, you hit mode.
Date.
And then 1-1, 1-5. That I figured out. 1 to 5 is Monday to Friday. 6 to 7 is the weekend.
This is not easy to use.
Every day of the week. Yes, exactly. Then you go to the alarm. I set the alarm. That's fine. But then, Leo, you click the next time, and it's just blinking 10.
What is that? Now, do you have?
Yes, Leo. Believe it or not, I had to look in the book.
Oh, the manual. Come on, man.
I am so embarrassed to admit that on the air and to you.
Come on, manual.
I have never seen this on a clock before. The 10 is how many minutes the snooze alarm is set for.
Ah, very handy.
So I love this. You can set it from 5 minutes to 60 minutes.
Can I make it a day? Like, wake me up in the tomorrow.
60 minutes, you hit it 3 times, and you're not going to work because it's now noon.
snooze an hour. Oh, I want that. That's my clock. I'm going to snooze an hour.
Exactly. Well, there are 2 USB ports in the back. They're only 5 volts, 1 amp, but that's enough to charge your phone overnight. Yeah. And what I do like is the dimming on it is a rotary knob. So a lot of clocks just have high, low.
Oh.
And at night, I like it so that you can barely see and you can do that with this clock.
I don't want any light in the room.
There you go. Yeah. And you can actually dim it down into blackness.
Okay.
Anyway, it's kind of neat, and it's $26. It's on Amazon.
All right. But it doesn't sound like it's as big as one thought.
No, not at all.
3-inch
digits. Oh, I just want to mention, if you're in New York City, there's a meetup tomorrow at Disneyland.
So now, Disneyland is about 10 foot by 10 foot. How many people are you expecting in there?
Well, wait a minute. First of all, in Disneyland, this clock is big.
Yes.
Disneyland happens to be 10 feet by 20 feet.
Oh, huge.
We're also using Dennis's apartment.
Oh, okay.
And we're also using the backyard. But since it's going to be 49 degrees tomorrow, that's out.
Oh, yikes.
We're expecting about 3 dozen people.
How should people get a hold of you? Should they email you?
Just go to gizwiz.biz and click on log and blog, and all the details are there.
I think that if somebody wants to come to your meetup, they should know, they should be able to figure out how to reach you. Like, otherwise, you know, you don't want somebody off the street.
No, you're absolutely right.
Was there free food?
beer, wine, and snacky thing.
Dick, hide your address. Don't tell anybody where. You have to figure out where Dick is.
Yeah, exactly.
He's in. I'll tell you. I'll give you a hint. North America.
Now you've ruined it.
Go to gizwiz.biz. That's his website, gizwiz.biz. And if you want to see more about the clock, you click the Gizwiz Visit the Tech Guy. But there's lots of other stuff in there, including the what the heck is it contest, where a close-up picture. It's going to run out at the end of the month. So your chance to win an autographed Mad Magazine if you can identify that picture. What the heck is it? Yes. Dick has a great podcast, too, gizwiz.tv. If you want to follow him and Chad Johnson each week, they have if you like this crap, they have a lot of it. it's jam-packed.
Offbeat gadgets.
I got a catalog the other day, and in it was the toothpick bird, which I think was my very first gadget back 10 years ago or something.
It was early on. Yeah. That was when you couldn't come up with something.
So I had a bird that picked up toothpicks.
I'm glad to see he lived.
The toothpick bird, you can still buy it online. Dick, thank you so much.
Okay, buddy.
Have a great
next week.
Day. All right.
Take care.
The day goes so fast when you're having fun. Thanks so much to Michael Cozio. He's our musical director, provides all the tunes, the disco and otherwise. And Heather Hammond, the phone ranger who was here filling in for Kim Schaffer. So great to see Heather again. Thank you for being here, Heather. Most of all, thanks to all of you. Oh, they've turned the lights out. It's already dark in Heather. Heather's ready to go. Thanks to all of you for joining us. I'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Are you still there, Shelley? She is. Hi, Shelley.
Yes.
Sorry to put you on hold like that. I just had to move on to other stuff. But what I'm now thinking is let's figure out why you're not getting internet on that machine. Is it a...
When you asked me if I have email, is I had Gmail, which I couldn't download.
Ah, but what you need is some other way to see if you can get online besides just your browser.
Okay, yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? Because it might it might not just be your browser. Let's see, what else do you do online? Well, we know that your iPad works fine, so your internet connection to the house is okay. So we're trying to figure out what's going on with your computer, and is it just Edge, which would be a big deal? We can fix that. Or is it something, is it you're not getting any internet at all? So, yeah, if you had an email program, not the browser, but an email program, that would help. We can do a ping. It's pretty simple. We're going to hit the Windows key and type CMD. That'll open a command prompt. And then you can type ping space google.com or yahoo.com or any website. And if you have internet, you'll see it's getting a reply.
Okay, so what do I...
So hit the window. Are you in front of it right now?
I've got the command prompt out.
Okay, good. So type ping space google.com. And tell me what you get back. Hit return.
It says pinging google.com.
Does it say a number after that?
Yes, there's a number. It says with 32 bytes of data. Then it says reply.
Okay.
Blah, blah, blah,
good.
Blah. Reply,
good
reply,
news.
Reply. Yeah.
Your computer is connecting to the internet.
Okay.
So that is good news. That means you have a connection to the internet. If you had an email program, you'd be able to get your email. So it's just something wrong with Edge. That's a fairly dopey thing to fix. I'm a little perturbed that the guy spent hours with you and you spent 3 days rebuilding the computer. When it's just Edge that's messed up. You do have another browser on the computer. You just don't know about it. So if you hit Windows key again, you can close that command window.
Okay.
Hit Windows key again and type internet. You'll see Internet Explorer.
Yeah, they did do that.
They did do that.
Okay.
Did they do that? And so open Internet Explorer and see if you can get online.
No. See, it says it can't. I'm getting the same error message.
Okay.
It says can't reach this page. Make sure, blah, blah, you know,
okay.
It goes on. And then,
okay.
You know, the thing is this. It says when you press the more information, it says the connection to the website was reset. Error code. Here's the error code. It's INET underscore E underscore download underscore failure.
Yeah.
And then I looked that up, you know, and I came across a website that was saying this very problem with that error message is common when you have Microsoft Edge and Windows 10. Do you want me to read you what they
say
on that website?
No, I don't need to know that. It isn't common. Everything after that sentence is useless. It's not common or it would be a real problem, right? People would say, gee, I can't surf the net with the browser that comes with my computer. That would be a real problem. The fact that the ping is working means that you are online. The fact that neither browser works can mean a number of things. It can mean that the browser subsystem that you're using is not working. That's probably why the tech asked you to reset your Windows. That might fix that particular problem. I'm still thinking this trend. Any security software you've got running can, unfortunately, disable internet connections. This is why I don't recommend this stuff.
When, you know what? I think I misspoke, because when they reset the computer, we didn't reinstall Trend. So it was just the factory settings and defaults that were installed.
So you don't have any of your original software installed at all?
Not the things I put on. Nothing.
Nothing. Just it's you're back to bare Windows.
That's right.
And wow, that's interesting.
Whatever it says, Microsoft Edge, whatever was originally there gets reinstalled when you buy it.
Okay. Yeah, that's a full reinstall, and that's a dramatic. Exactly. That's a like I said, that's the scorched earth solution. It's usually the last thing that anybody tries, and it still didn't work. So now Microsoft has a network troubleshooter you can run. And again, this is going to require Windows key, and then type network space trouble. Actually, there's two things you'll see there, but identify and repair network problems is probably the one you want.
Okay.
And then it will run. It may or, I don't know, did the tech guy go through this with you?
No.
Okay. So try that.
Okay, so it's detecting problems. It's
yes, it is, isn't it? Okay.
Well, I mean, nothing came up yet, but yeah, we starting network diagnostics.
Okay.
Looking for problems, collecting configuration details.
Yeah.
Troubleshooting could not identify the problem. You can try exploring other options that might be helpful.
Oh, great. Okay. So it did not identify the problem.
No.
DNS? Could be a DNS failure. So I guess one other thing we could try here. It sounds like it's interesting. So if he went through a full Windows and reinstall, you don't have any Trend Micro on there. If you type Windows key Trend, you don't see a program running. That program is gone.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. Well, that means it's not that either.
Yep, it's gone. So, I don't know.
So, it's interesting. Your system is working. You're online. There is no problem with your internet access. That ping command's a good thing to remember, because that tells you a lot. For instance, the fact that when you entered google.com, it then came up with a number after that. That means that the name lookup worked. And then when it said reply, it means that not only did you send a message out through your internet to Google, but Google responded back and you received it. So it was a way of very quickly verifying that you have full internet access and that DNS is working. So now we know that really the problem is your browsers are somehow damaged. There is a way to reset Edge. And you know, unfortunately, Internet Explorer and Edge kind of are different views of the same thing. So maybe there's some relationship there. So
wasn't it reset when I did the whole reset?
Yeah.
Wasn't it reset then?
Yeah. But we can try it again just to see. So if you hit this is follow along now. This is a little tricky. Windows X, so the Windows key plus X, like Shift X. And you're going to go to settings on that black menu that pops up.
Okay. Got it.
And in the settings, you're gonna just under the find a setting, just type Edge. Well, that's
wait a minute. I lost it.
It went away, huh?
It went away.
Well, do it again. Windows X settings, and then you're going to go to the apps.
Okay, Windows X settings. Okay, Windows settings.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to go to apps. Got it.
Okay, and then go to Edge in the apps. So you're going to scroll down until you see Microsoft Edge. I think it's under M. Is it? Yes. And click that.
Okay.
And then click Advanced Options. And now we're looking at Edge just to see what's going on.
Okay.
There is under there
location
is
location is off, but that doesn't matter.
Yeah, mine's off too. That's that by default. That's what you want. But if you scroll down, you'll see reset, and there's two buttons under that: repair and reset. So the first thing you generally want to do is repair, just to see if that can fix it.
So press repair.
Mm-hmm. And that'll relaunch Edge if it's not open.
It's okay. It just check marked it like it's done.
Yeah,
it hasn't relaunched anything.
Yeah. Well, go now. Launch Edge from your menu and see if you can go to. Let's not go to Google. Now maybe Google's being blocked. Let's go to Yahoo.com. Let's say. Sometimes one of the things viruses do is keep you from going to Google.
Okay, so no, it says can't reach this page.
Okay. Try, maybe not Yahoo then. Let's try Twit, TWIT.TV. That's my site.
WWW?
You don't need the WWW, just Twit.TV.
Twit.TV?
Yeah, that's my website.
Can't reach this page.
Okay. Okay. That's interesting. Okay. So there is a reset command as well, right under the repair command. Why don't we try that? I also, somebody's mentioning this is a good point. Make sure the date is correct on your computer, the date and time.
10/20/2008.
Okay, good.
Looks like it's current.
Looks current, yep. Sometimes on a computer, if it loses the date, it resets to 19, what does Microsoft do, 1918 or something, 1908. Now, that was a Macintosh. I don't remember what Microsoft does, but an out-of-date.
Computers were invented.
Yeah. An out-of-date computer can do that.
So it says it's checkmark now reset.
Okay, try just one more time. Let's see if we can get.
Okay. What is it, twit.tv?
Yeah, or, anything but a search engine, because sometimes malware will.
No. Nothing.
Okay.
Try Yahoo, too.
Malware likes to block search engines in case you're searching for a solution. How did you find the, you used a different device to find the, to Google the tech support?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I have an iPhone and I have an iPad.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I know. It's crazy.
All right. Next thing I'm going to have you do is go to the network settings. You got that settings window open. If you back out with the left arrow on the upper left, all the way out, and we can go into network and internet.
Network.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
network profile.
You see network status, first of all. Do you see the status?
Network status. Let's see.
So in settings, if you click network and internet, the very first page should have a status page.
Yeah. So it says you're connected to the internet. I have an Ethernet connection right now because that was one of the things that we
good.
Tried.
Yeah, that was on my list. Okay, that's good. So it does say you're connected to the internet. It shows a little computer and then Wi-Fi and the name of your network.
Yeah, but it's the Ethernet.
Yeah, that's fine. So it's not Wi-Fi, right? But that's fine.
Right.
Good. So that's another. It's kind of like a ping. It's another way to see that you're connected. Let's click Change Adapter Options. It's really interesting that you're neither Wi-Fi nor Ethernet are working on this system.
Okay.
And you should see Ethernet and Wi-Fi in the network connections.
I do.
Yeah. Let's it's weird that both hardware and so let's double click Ethernet first Okay. And then click, you should say, what does it say? Connect using Ethernet, does it say Intel Ethernet connection or something like that?
The connection?
Connect?
It says IP, well, it says Ethernet status. Is that what you mean, generally?
No. So you have Ethernet. So if you double-click Ethernet, you should get Ethernet properties window popping up.
Okay, so it says, yeah, there's a properties little button there.
Yeah. Yeah. What does it say? Connect using...
connect using Qualcomm Atheros AR8161. Okay.
That's Wi-Fi, but okay. And if you press the configure button underneath that, what is the device status?
Network adapters.
Yep.
Oh, that's the type. Device status. This device is working properly.
Well, son of a gun. No, it's not. You're lying to me.
I know.
It's not working properly. But actually, it actually maybe is. So, at the hardware, what we're doing is looking at the hardware level. At the hardware level, your adapter seems to be working all right. You're properly connected to the internet. And Windows thinks you're connected. So what we're trying to do is narrow down at what point the disconnect is happening. It doesn't sound like you're having any issues. I wonder if it's an IPv6 issue. It says it's working properly.
I think they tried all that stuff.
So you've been through all this process.
Yeah.
That is a mystery.
They tried all that kind of stuff.
We know DNS is working. We know the network is there. So somebody thinks, and this actually may be the case, that you have a proxy installed. So... let's go back to network settings in the control panel.
Just close all this stuff down.
Yeah, you can back out basically and get back to network and internet.
Okay, settings.
And we want to, I think under find a setting, we're going to type proxy. If you type proxy, P-R-O-X-Y, you'll see change proxy settings.
Right. Okay.
Now you should have a window that says proxy.
Just click on change proxy settings?
Yes.
Okay.
Now
proxy.
It should be automatically detect settings. Off setup script should be off. Most importantly, use a proxy server should be off. It's under manual. There's two in the proxy window. There's automatic and there's manual.
That's not off.
It says use a proxy server is on.
Yes. Excuse me. It says off. I'm sorry.
Okay. The only one that should be on at all is automatically detect settings.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You could turn that off if you want. That is also something malicious software uses. To hijack your computer is it turns on a proxy server, which means surf through this system. Don't go directly to the site. But that's off.
Okay, now everything's off.
That is very interesting. we have gone through everything I can think of. It sounds like this is something you kind of went through with this guy.
I didn't do this proxy thing, but okay. I did like a million other things.
Yeah.
And then I was like, maybe we should just uninstall Windows 10 and install an earlier version.
No. You know? So when you got the how old is the computer?
The computer, I don't know exactly, but it's not new.
And that may be an issue.
Can I read you this thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe it'll bring something to mind. It's about that error message.
Okay.
What
was the error message again?
It's inet E, resource not found. And then what they say here is that message is a Windows 10 error that might occur when using Microsoft Edge web browser. Yeah. So that's my
right
situation. The error prevents users from entering a particular website that they were able to reach before. However, it's not a simple connectivity error. The source of the error is one of the cumulative updates provided by Microsoft.
Oh, yeah, this might be an incompatibility with 18. When did this start?
This started Tuesday night.
Okay. I wonder if you got pushed an update. Tuesday is when the patch updates come out. And I wonder if you got pushed an update.
Then it said Windows. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. What does it say?
It says Windows 10 users started reporting about this problem on Microsoft forums after the release of Creators Update.
Yeah, 1803.
Cumulative update KB4022725 had a bug which broke Microsoft Edge. However, Microsoft engineers haven't fixed this problem yet, and users continue having these connectivity problems.
Wow. Wow.
Okay.
Okay. This sounds like exactly what's going on. So the way we make a note of that KV number. You're on Windows. Okay. What version of Windows are you on? 8?
10.
Right? Okay.
Yeah, because I installed that. I didn't buy that with this computer.
Yeah, it may be there's a compatibility issue. This is why it's so tough with Windows, is that there's so many possible configurations.
I was thinking of getting a Mac.
Yeah, you wouldn't have this problem if you had a Mac, because only Apple makes the hardware. So Apple, you know, makes sure that it works with its hardware. I mean, their problem. It's not a flawless system, but it's not going to have this problem.
Would I be able to get on my desktop remotely at work, which is all PCs, if I had a Mac?
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah.
That's not a problem.
No.
Okay.
I think what we're going to look for is that particular update, and maybe uninstall it would be my next. This is an interesting conundrum. Give me the number again. It was KV.
It's KB as in boy.
B, brother, yep.
4022725.
Okay, this came out June
13th. And in parentheses, they have been in parentheses, OS build 15063.413.
Yeah, I see that.
15063.414.
The other thing you might... Real quick, well, you can't do Windows Update because you can't. Well, try Windows Update, actually. Maybe you can. So if you hit Windows key I, that'll take you to your settings. And then click the Update and Security setting. And just...
Wait, Windows... So hit the Windows button and I?
Windows I, which just opens settings. It's another way to open settings. There's about 18 ways to open settings, which is one more way. And click the last icon in that list is updates and security. And that'll take you to Windows Update.
Right. I pressed Windows and then I, and it didn't come up.
The same time, like Shift key, like capital I, only Windows I. Maybe that's
nothing
come up. All right. Well, you can go to you can hit the start button and select set this little gear icon. That's another way to do it.
That's at settings.
Yeah.
Why is it there? That's not where you want to be.
Yeah,
it?
Settings. And there's an update. The last item in the settings is update and security.
The last thing I'm showing is proxy.
Oh, yeah. Back out of that. So in the upper left-hand corner, just hit that left arrow till you get back to the top. We're still in the proxy settings. So back out. I'm sorry. I forgot we'd done that. You could also just close that window. But you want to get... We're going to another area now of the same thing, which is updates and security.
Okay, well, if I press...
Just close all the windows.
Okay, it's all closed.
Close all the windows. And then and then type Windows I. See if you get a window popping up.
Finally, yeah.
Yeah.
It popped up.
And then the last icon, update and security.
Got it.
And so first of all, under Windows Update, what does it say? You're up to date?
No updates available. We'll continue to check daily. Check for updates.
Let's see. Yeah, press check for updates. Let's just see.
When they reinstalled everything, would they have reinstalled the updates, like the factory settings?
Yeah.
They would have.
But if, yeah, so if you're not up to date, that problem dates back more than a year. Dates to June 2017. So almost certainly it's been fixed. The website you're looking at that said it hasn't been fixed is probably pretty old. Almost certainly that's been fixed. So if you can get your system updated all the way, that might fix this problem.
Okay. Well, it says I encountered an error.
Yeah.
It says error encountered. We'll continue to check daily for newer updates.
Yeah, so you're not up to date.
Connect to the update service.
Yeah, you can't connect. So it's using the same whatever it is to get online. So what we want to do is uninstall KB4022725.
Uh-huh.
The other thing we can do, he did a reset, which basically eliminated all the apps, but didn't really do a Windows install from scratch. And it reinstalled that update that's breaking it. And I think actually this is what's breaking. So what we need to do is I hate Windows. Well, this is because this category of issues is common in the Windows world because there's so many different kinds of hardware. It's not at all unusual. You know, there's something about your particular machine and that particular update. It's not universal, or it would have been, you know, you would have heard a roar of a billion machines.
Right.
But it happens apparently, and it has to do with that update. So there are a couple of things you can do. You can remove that update. In fact, if you can view update history, you'll see you can uninstall some updates, and that might be the way around this. Or you can rebuild from scratch. In other words, build a correct Windows 10 machine. At this point, I think that's your best bet. It's kind of a complicated process. Because you weren't online, he was only able to basically reset the existing broken version of Windows. That's why I didn't fix anything. And what you really want to do is get the most, you're at least a year and a half out of date now, which is kind of problematic. So what you probably really want to do is install a fresh copy, a completely fresh up-to-date copy of Windows on there, and then cross your fingers that actually solves this problem. It may not. It may be that this hardware is incompatible with Windows 10.
Yeah, so that's what we were talking about, is maybe installing an earlier version, but...
Yeah, but where were you going to get Windows 7 from? And do you have your serial number and all that? Where'd you get this machine? Did you buy it?
Yeah, bought this.
Yeah.
It's Best Buy or Costco or somewhere.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Toshiba. Yeah, it's a laptop. Yeah. I've been using it, a long time.
Yeah, it's kind of thrashed, sounds like. So if you have a friend who can get online, you can download from Microsoft something they call the Windows Media Creation Tool with the current version of Windows 10. Because Windows 10 has been installed on your machine, it's entitled to Windows 10 and you no longer need to enter a serial number. You don't have to do anything special to put Windows 10 on there. So if you go to Microsoft.com and get the Windows Media Creation Tool and the latest version of Windows 10, you can then install it on your system. Do you have data on the system that you want to keep?
I already backed it up.
Good. So you can then, and since you've already done this, it's not going to be a big, long process. Basically, you're going to reinstall Windows 10 from scratch, but you're going to install the most recent version. Now, it may be that doesn't fix it, in which case your machine is incompatible with Windows 10, which is a possibility. Or it may be that when you did the last reset, we know you couldn't get online, so all you did was reinstall that same version of Windows. That's a reasonable thing to do in case some other software is causing the problem. We know now that's not the case. Nothing's causing that problem. It's something wrong with the TCP/IP stack, which is the software stuff that gets you online. You can still ping, which means your hardware is working properly. It's on the internet. You can talk to the internet and talk back. But what you can't do is TCP/IP, which is basically necessary for Windows Update and surfing the net and all of that stuff. That's somehow broken. Right. And it sounds like that particular KB update is known to cause problems on some machines. What I don't know is if those machines, known issues in this update. Yeah, even Microsoft doesn't say this, it will knock Edge off. But it sounds like there's an incompatibility issue with this update. If you're going to use Windows, you absolutely have to be able to install updates and keep it up to date. Otherwise, you're vulnerable. And so, what do you have a friend who has a computer who can download something for you?
Yeah, I'm going to do that. I've got a computer. I got my daughter. I told her to bring me her computer.
Tell your daughter, come over. You can Google Microsoft Media Windows Media Creation Tool. Yeah. And it will then, the number one result, at least on my system, is download Windows 10 image. And what you're going to want is to create a Windows 10 installation media. You'll need a 8 gigabyte USB flash drive if you have one of those lying around.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, who doesn't these days? So I think it needs to be at least 8 gigabytes. Mm-hmm. And you're going to basically what you're going to do is you're going to download this program onto your existing machine or her machine actually. And then run the program and it will say, "Okay, where's that USB key?" You stick it in. And it does some work, takes about 15, 20 minutes, and it's going to turn that USB key into Windows. This is actually something everybody should have, a Windows installer. And then you're going to, on your machine, and this may not work if it's a really old Toshiba, but if it's anything within the last, say, 8 years, say, you're going to want to boot to that USB key. So you're going to shut down Windows. Actually, you know what we should do real quickly, just add it for giggles, is see if we can run the browser in safe mode. That might actually be worthwhile thing. But you're gonna
did that already.
Oh, you did that? All right. So yeah. The fact that it doesn't work in safe mode really is a bad sign. So, because safe mode loads a minimum set of drivers. It's about as simple version of Windows as can be. I think you actually nailed it, that this particular update, why you had never encountered the problem until this week is a little odd, but perhaps your system wasn't getting updated.
Well, that could very well be because I'm not focused too much on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that may be what's going on. I'm going to do this for the chat room, even though it's not going to be useful, but I'm going to do it anyway. They want me to tell you to hit Windows key and type WINVER return.
WINVER. I think we did this.
I'm sure you did. And that this will tell me what version of Windows.
Oh, we did.
Yeah. What version of Windows are you?
Version of Windows?
Yeah, it should say about Windows. You should get a little window that says about Windows.
That didn't come up.
Try it again then. Windows key WINVER return. WINVER, short for Windows version.
WINVER. Maybe it's because I'm holding the Windows key down.
No, yeah, just tap it. Now, this time you just tap it. Sorry.
Okay.
Tap it, then type WinVer. Sorry. No, I know. It's confusing. Tap it and type WinVer return.
And it says get connected to the internet. Is that what you're trying
to do? No, that's interesting. I want to. It's just about Windows. So
Windows, WINVER.
Return.
Enter. Windows 10. Oh, there it came up.
Yeah. Version.
Microsoft version 1803.
Yep, that's what I thought. OS build.
17134.345.
Okay. So, yeah, so that's the spring update. So it means you are updated at least through spring. I don't know why all of a sudden this stopped working. That's odd. You would have had that patch that they're talking about last June. Not even this June. June 2017. So why a year and four months later, or 6 months later, it would suddenly stop working is beyond me, but Windows can be like that. I think your last ditch is to do this with your daughter's laptop. Download the media creation tool. Make a USB key that's the Windows installer. You will then have to, this is the most complicated part, tell the Toshiba to boot to the USB key. It may be that it's already set up to do so. So put the USB key in a USB slot on the laptop and restart. Hit the start menu and hit restart. If with any luck, it will boot Windows setup. And then you can, literally, you're going to want to format the drive and start over and put Windows on there. And then if it still does not work, then there is a compatibility issue. You can get, but you should only get it from Microsoft. I think you can still get Windows 7. The problem is, unlike Windows 10, to install Windows 7, you'll need a serial number. And I don't know if you have yours. It might be on a sticker on the machine, but it may have come with. It's kind of a pain.
Okay.
So, but on this page, the Windows Creation Tool, they do have instructions on how to reinstall Windows 10, et cetera, et cetera. And you may need to get into the setup mode on your Toshiba, which will involve hitting a key when it's on it's restarting. It sometimes is the escape key, sometimes it's the delete key, sometimes it's F10, sometimes it's F7. It really depends on the machine. And you'll go into the setup mode, and at that point you can say boot to the USB drive. This is all kind of tricksy. If you bought it at Best Buy or you bought it at Costco, you can also bring it to them. And this might be the easiest thing to do. Say, please, I need to reinstall a clean install of Windows 10. The problem is that all of this is still a diagnostic, because if Edge won't work with a completely clean and up-to-date install, there is a compatibility issue.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll either want to put an older version of Windows on there or get a different device.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to run Windows software?
Do I have to?
Yeah, I mean, you said you need to connect to work. Are you using that laptop to connect to work right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Remotely. Uh-huh.
That's interesting.
I have to be able to do that.
That may be related as well. Do you have special software to do that?
It's just something that...
How do you... When you log into work, how do you do it? You do it through the browser?
Yeah.
Okay.
Through the remote desktop.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
It. So now I see why this is somewhat of a crisis, because you need to you need to do this.
I need to work.
And you can't, and that part's not working either.
Well, no, because I can't get through to it.
Yeah. Yeah, this sounds like the TCP stack is corrupted. So,
I'm just inclined to go out and buy a Mac if I can, as long as I can get to work. I can work remotely. You know, their whole system is just PCs, so...
Yeah, I'm not... You know, you have to ask the IT department, can I use a Mac to access work?
Yeah.
Because they'll know whether you can or can't. You know, even better would be a Chromebook, because it's less expensive and it's very simple and secure. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, and it may be sufficient. Okay. So that's a question for your IT guys. Do I have to have a Windows 10 machine to access work, or can I use a Chromebook or a Mac? It may in fact require a Windows 10 machine.
Okay.
And this is the other thing. Okay, this is interesting. There is a UWP bug. I wonder if this is the UWP bug. So it might be that another thing you could do. I don't want to do this. Well, if it's the UWP bug, it means it will. No, but Internet Explorer didn't work either, so it's not UWP bug. I don't know what's wrong with it. It sounds like it's just an incompatibility.
The suggestions that this website that I found this, problem at.
Yeah, what do they say?
So they have three suggestions. One was disable TCP fast open feature on Edge. One was reinstall Microsoft Edge. And one was uninstall Wi-Fi driver in Windows 10.
I don't think any of those are it.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I'm sorry. I think the best bet at this point is a clean install of Windows, and if that does not of an up-to-date Windows, and if that does not work, then yeah, you might need to get a new computer.
Yeah, well, I'll try that. I mean,
might as well. That won't take too long. That's just the downloading it and getting it to boot up and running it.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Wish I could have been more help.
Thank you so much.
Well, my pleasure. I can see how it's so frustrating. And if your guy tells you, yeah, you can use a Mac, it really depends on what kind of VPN they're using. If the guy says, yeah, you can use a Mac or a Chromebook, then that might be you can get a Chromebook for $300. It would do everything. Actually, your iPad could probably do it. You could ask him, can I do it with an iPad?
No, I can do it with an iPad. Okay. It's just not the same.
It's
not
too
the
small
same,
a screen.
You know?
Yeah, and you need a keyboard.
It is.
Yeah.
You need a good keyboard. The Chromebook my son uses, and he loves it.
Good. Yeah.
He uses it for his business and everything.
Yeah, Chromebook's great because if this had happened on a Chromebook, it has a command called PowerWash that just downloads the new version of the latest version and reinstalls everything automatically. But this would never have happened on a Chromebook because it's much simpler.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, I thank you a million.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't be. I wish I could have helped you fix it, but at least we tried.
Yeah.
All right.
I've learned some stuff along the way. Anyway.
Yeah. This is how you become a geek. Everybody gets to be a geek by having things not work. That's exactly how it happens.
Well, I know, because it's running in the back of your mind and you want to fix it.
Yeah.
So you're thinking about it like,
yeah, exactly.
Try this and try that.
It's a problem. Yeah. We always want to solve it. Yeah. That's how you become a geek, Shelley.
That's fun.
You're on your way.
Home way.
Have a great day.
Well, have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.